lifestyle back here in the UK. In other news, to the cruise of death, of course, three people, you know, lost their lives. Here's a video filmed on board the merchant vessel Hondius showing its captain saying a passenger had died.
One of our passengers sadly passed away last night. Tragic as it is, it was due to natural causes, we believe.
No, it wasn't due to natural causes. That is, two Britons are brought back home and are self-isolating. Farewell to the man who invented rolling news, Ted Turner, and CNN. He dies aged 87. And as the Harry Potter series of films celebrates its 25th birthday, I'll be asking, what's the magic of Harry Potter? Those stories and more after the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, UK health officials say the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. It's after revealing two British people on board a cruise ship at the centre of an outbreak have returned home. The pair are now self-isolating and are not reporting any symptoms of the rare rat-borne virus. Professor Robin May is from the UK Health Security Agency.
It remains relatively difficult to contract this virus. And as I said earlier, in terms of human-to-human transmission, actually quite rare. So the wider risk out into the public is still very low. What is really important, though, I think, is that we work very closely with those individuals to contact trace and to self-isolate to really minimise that. Because, as I say, this is, if you get it, a very serious disease.
President Trump has predicted the war in Iran will be over quickly after holding what he's described as very good talks. A US media report suggests that the White House is close to agreeing to a 14-point peace memo. Iran says it is reviewing a new proposal, but their top official says Washington wants Tehran to surrender. A former Sainsbury's shop assistant has told LBC that his soul is crushed after he was dismissed following an altercation with a thief. Gary MacArthur lost his job in March after escorting a shoplifter out of a store in West Wickham in South London last year. It's understood he'd received a previous warning about tackling a shoplifter. Mr. MacArthur has told us that his job meant everything to him.
My soul is crushed in the sense of it's destroyed for the old humanity side of doing the right thing, being the right person. I mean, I've not got a bad bone in my body. I'm not a spiteful or hurtful person. I feel that I do the right thing when the right time is needed.
Sainsbury's says it asks staff to stick to guidelines specifically designed to keep everyone safe. Polling stations are just opening across England, Scotland and Wales. Elections for the Welsh and Scottish parliaments are taking place. Local council and mayoral votes are being held in England, where photo ID is required to vote in person. Polls close at 10 o'clock tonight. And Arsenal will face holders Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League final later this month. The French side drew 1-1 with Bayern Munich last night, meaning they progressed 6-5 on aggregate. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen later at 10,438. It closed up 219 yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells will develop for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Stick to the shopping list. Stick to the shopping list. Stick to the
unexpected bargain in the bagging area.
Oh, well, lists are made to be broken. Especially for the flaming incredible gas barbecue at Aldi. Just £99.99. The garden event, Thursday, 7th of May. Aldi special buys. Once they're gone, they're gone.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Mind you, 4 minutes after seven on Thursday, the 7th of May, coming up in this hour. A deal, a peace deal for Iran, it's a possibility, but you know how quickly things change. Meanwhile, back here at home, I'll be asking, how have your habits changed? Are you due, as is reported, they're not selling as much petrol or diesel because of the cost. People simply aren't driving less, unless, of course, you have to. Also, to try and combat soaring prices in the supermarkets, a lot of people are suddenly using parts of their garden to grow fruit and vegetables. Are you one of those? How have you changed your particular habit to try and combat the months now of the Iran conflict? In other news, as confusion surrounds the latest as regards the cruise of death, it's reported that two Britons are now self-isolating in the UK. Three people, including a British doctor, evacuated from the cruise ship. Professor Robin May is from the UK Health Security Agency, and he gave this update yesterday.
There are a small number of individuals who have already left the cruise previous to this outbreak, two in the UK, and we've contacted both those individuals. We're very grateful for them. They are self-isolating with our support.
Well, let's hope they are. In other news...
Police in Nottingham say they are done with children terrorising the community and wearing balaclavas as they crack down on antisocial behaviour. I'm LBC's George Ike on Operation View.
Plus, are you one of what's reportedly a growing number of people who are let down on house purchases on exchange day, and it can cost you thousands? Remember, when you think it's actually going to go through, the frustration and the cost, we'll cover that later in the show. And farewell to the man who effectively invented rolling TV news.
This news service will be called the Cable News Network and will program continually updated half-hour segments of national news, business news, sports and features 24 hours a day.
Yes, buccaneering U.S. businessman Ted Turner, who's died aged 87. A full tribute to him later in this hour.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Noting this is a very fluid situation, and I should also remind you, as I told you yesterday, this is a bit of a collector's item, this show, because on a local election day, national, of course, in England, in Scotland and Wales, but local in England, but we have to be very careful with the politics we cover, so there will be a different range of stories, and I'd obviously ask you, when you come through and talk to me, not to try and make any political assertions, because we have to be very careful about that. But don't worry. When the polls close, we will be covering, of course, in full detail. So, this story we would have done anyway, because it's huge importance, not just for the United Kingdom, but nationally. On the UK front, by the way, it's hearing through the course of this week that they're selling less fuel, less petrol and less diesel. That's because people effectively are only driving if they have to. And if you go by and you see the prices at 180, 190 for diesel, 150, 160 for unleaded, you could hardly blame them. There's also reporting again to garden nurseries, massive increase in people going in buying tomato plants and various other than seeds, as one can only assume you've decided to suddenly, if you've got a bit of room in your back garden or you're going to get a window box or whatever it might be, heck, these prices in the supermarkets are a nightmare. Let's grow our own tomatoes or lettuce or whatever it might be. Radishes, I don't know. Are you one of those? How have you changed your lifestyle? That's at home. Let's go abroad. Let's go to Washington. President Trump saying there's a very good chance of war ending. He's offered Tehran a range of concessions. But, of course, as ever with Donald Trump, there's also the threat as well. It's not all carrot. Here's the stick. Airstrikes would resume if Iran rejected the deal. Here is the president in the Oval Office.
In the case of Iran, we're not going to let Iran have a nuclear weapon. We're not going to let that happen. And we won't let that happen. And so we're dealing with people that want to make a deal very much. And we'll see whether or not they can make a deal that's satisfactory to us. We have it very much under control. The blockade is unbelievable. The Navy's been incredible. The job they did is like a wall of steel. Nobody goes through. In particular, the Iranians, they're not getting anything through one way or the other. So they're out of business. And we'll see whether or not they are agreeing. And if they don't agree, they'll end up agreeing shortly thereafter. So that's the way it is.
Let's ask Greg Karlstrom, who's Middle East correspondent for The Economist, joining us from Riyadh to try and pick through some of that potential bluff and bluster. What is the reality on the ground, Greg, as you see it? Good morning.
Good morning to you, Nick. I think we are at a point right now where they are talking about, yet again, an agreement to keep talking about an agreement. This 14-point, one-page memorandum of understanding, as they're describing it, does seem as if they've made a bit of progress on the substantive issues compared to a month ago. They seem to be converging, for example, on this idea of a time-bound moratorium on uranium enrichment rather than a permanent ban, which is what America had wanted, and a no ban at all, which is what the Iranians had sought in earlier negotiations. So it's not that there's been no progress, but there is still a lot of detail that has to go into any nuclear agreement. They have to work out the extent of sanctions relief that the Americans are going to provide, all of that is going to take time. So best case scenario here is a deal that slowly starts to reopen the Strait of Hormuz, that buys time for further talks. But I don't think that means much change in the flow of oil and gas and other commodities coming out of the Gulf.
Why the potential change of tack within the White House, which of course can turn on a dime anyway? Has he got one eye to the midterms then, Greg?
I think he has one eye to the midterms. I think Trump is torn right now. On the one hand, there's clearly some frustration that this blockade, American blockade of Iranian ports, has not been as immediately effective as Trump was told it would be. I mean, you go back a couple of weeks and he was talking about how Iran's oil facilities were going to get backed up because they couldn't export anything and they were all going to explode in 3 days, he said. That didn't happen, obviously. That deadline came and went. So he was unhappy about the slow pace of the blockade, thought he could break the deadlock in the Strait of Hormuz by announcing this short-lived Project Freedom. At the same time, though, he's also clearly reluctant to resume the war. And so when we saw Iran lash out at the United Arab Emirates, bomb the oil terminal in Fujairah in the UAE, there was a lot of pressure on Trump to retaliate. And I don't think he wants to do that. And so we saw him climb down from this effort to try and crank open the strait.
The other party, of course, involved is Israel. Any word from Benjamin Netanyahu's administration?
They are publicly keeping quiet about this. I think in private, they are very nervous about the sort of deal that seems to be emerging. What the Americans have spelled out as their demands for an agreement, they are entirely focused on Iran's nuclear program. Now, these demands do go further than the JCPOA, the previous nuclear deal from a decade ago, would be a stronger deal than that. But it says nothing about Iran's missiles, about Iran's support for regional proxies like Hamas and Hezbollah. These are things that the Israelis, of course, want to see in a deal. And then if the Americans provide extensive sanctions relief in return, that's an economic lifeline for this regime that is reeling right now, that is really in an economic bind. And so an agreement that essentially bails them out and only imposes some restrictions on their nuclear program, that will be seen by many people in Israel as insufficient and worrimsome.
As ever, thanks for your time and your interpretations. Greg Karlstrom is Middle East correspondent for The Economist. He was joining us from Riyadh 12 after 7. Now let's come back to events at home. And I told you that petrol retailers are saying they're not selling as much petrol or diesel because they reckon people don't want to go for a drive unless they absolutely have to. And the same, again, at home, as I told you, the nursery supplies, the plant nurseries are selling vegetables and not vegetable plants and seeds. Let's turn to Martin James, who's a consumer rights expert, journalist and broadcaster. What are the changes or the trends that you are hearing or you're picking up from your colleagues and contacts? Good morning, Martin.
Good morning, Nick. Well, we're certainly seeing trends changing across the board when it comes to the current conflict in the Middle East and its wide-reaching impacts. I mean, obviously, we do need to obviously stay optimistic about this. Mm. But realistically, the experts I speak to in each sector are predicting long-term implications, even if everything's sorted out tomorrow. Now, what's interesting is if we move away from the pandemic, where it was kind of an all-round panic when we were facing all kinds of challenges, this time round, the public are becoming much, much better informed. When I travel around the UK and speak to people, and when I'm filming or taking part in radio shows, people ask me what they can do practically. And the general theme across all sectors, from petrol right the way through to finances, is how people can preempt and avoid problems further down the line. Nobody seems to be waiting for the problems to hit them. So it's positive in the sense that the listeners are taking control, taking agency, if you like, of their own situation. But it's also concerning in the sense that for many people, the margin of error is so tight that they can't afford even the slightest increase. So positive news in some senses, but also a bit of a sense of doom, a bit of a sense of despair, because if people are buying tomato seeds and cutting back on driving so much, these are slim ways to actually save some money.
As an expert in this field, I would imagine you would urge people to go to those price comparison sites. Are they doing big business at the moment, Martin?
Well, they certainly are, yes. And actually, in some ways, we've seen, again, I'm doing my level best, Nick, to bring the more positive news.
Right.
Because you want people to keep listening. So there are lots and lots of things that people can do. So just looking at petrol alone, The government introduced its fuel finder plans. They came into force more or less in February. Lots of criticism in some senses. But what this means is you can now go online and look at a variety of free apps and websites that will tell you the cheapest petrol, diesel that's available in your area. It will, some of them on the motoring organisation websites will tell you the average by supermarket, so you can compare and see what your one's doing. So it is possible to actually find some better deals. But as you say, a lot of the evidence, certainly that we're seeing directly and indirectly, is that the sales levels are dropping off when it comes to things like fuel, and people are being a lot more cautious. A couple of years back over the pandemic, I wrote a whole newspaper column on saving money. And at the time, I got a bit of grumbling from drivers on the grounds that a lot of the tips weren't fabulous. Well, let me tell you, that article has come back with a vengeance. People are clearing their boots. They are taking the roof racks off and driving a lot more economically. So people are really looking for anything that they can do to make their tank go further.
Well, let's quickly go through them. Obviously, the roof rack is the wind resistance, and you're just adding to it. Obviously, you don't want to carry around too much weight in the car. What else? I suppose correct tyre pressures and things like that. Is it lastly, Martin?
That's right. That's right. Tyre pressure is a really, really big one. Driving sensibly, sorry for all of the boy racers out there, but driving sensibly is the way forward, you know, consistently. So not going under the speed limit too much, but slowing down too much, unfortunately, not idling.
No aircon?
The aircon is an interesting one. So if you can open the windows, yes, to a certain degree, that's going to save you a bit of cash. Not that we've quite hit the weather for that just yet. But the other thing is, if you're driving, obviously, at speed, that's going to introduce a certain element of drag to the vehicle. So it's knowing about when to use the aircon. And, of course, the other one is not overly filling your tank, because that, ironically, makes your car heavier and less effective when you're driving it.
I wish we had more time, but I had to let you go. Martin, I've enjoyed our conversation. Look after yourself. Martin James, consumer rights expert, journalist and broadcaster. Well, there's some of the things you might be doing, clearing the boot of your car, taking off the roof rack. That I used to have a roof rack, an absolute nightmare taking the damn thing off and putting it on again. But we'll take your calls on that. Here's one, Lee in Oxford. I've used the Iran war as an excuse to diet. I've got no money and I've got no food. No money for diesel, so I may as well lose a few pounds. Lee, good luck. I suppose that's slightly tongue-in-cheek, but I hope it goes well anyway. So we'll take your calls on how it's changing, and, of course, more globally, how the possibility of peace is looking. Plus, to that deadly virus, a British man among three evacuated from the cruise ship, Nika Alexander, from the World Health Organization.
This isn't a new virus. It has been around. We've known about it for a good 30 years now. We, as in the collective health community, knows how to manage this virus.
And farewell to the man who effectively invented rolling TV news.
This is CNN.
What a voice James Earl Jones had. It's a farewell to Ted Turner. Appreciation of that career later in the show. Let's get the 7:15 LBC News headlines now, though. Dominic Ellis.
Two British people are self-isolating at home after returning from a cruise ship struck by a fatal outbreak of hantavirus. President Trump says the United States has held very good talks in the past 24 hours with Iran to try to end the war. And polling stations have opened for a series of elections in England, Scotland and Wales. LBC weather cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for the east and south, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Long delays continue on the M20 westbound to Junction 11 at Hythe. It's following an accident and only one lane is open. On the M25, it's very busy clockwise at Junction 11 at Chertsey because a car broke down earlier. No Woolwich Ferry running at all. That's because of a technical problem. And there are restrictions on the A2, the Old Kent Road eastbound in Bermondsey, because of an accident at Albany Road. On the train, Southern and Thameslink services are disrupted between East Croydon and East Grinstead. It's because the overnight works finish late, but the delays on the Gatwick Express have now cleared. And also on the trains, Greater Anglia services are disrupted southbound via Shelford following a signal failure.
The LBC app. News your way. This is LBC.
Gary knows that a great week starts with great preparation. 5 a.m. alarm set, clothes laid out, and making a quick stop at his nearest service station. He grabs a croissant to go and presses a button on a Costa Express coffee machine. As the aroma of our signature Mocha Italia blend fills the air, his favourite latte fills the cup, made with real beans and fresh milk. Oh, that's quality. Start as you mean to go on with Costa Express.
Call Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
How likely is she to, you know, have another heart attack?
Can I still go to the gym after heart surgery?
Is my mum still my mum if she has a new heart?
When it comes to heart health, no question is too big or small. That's why British Heart Foundation have dedicated cardiac nurses you can speak to by phone, email, or online chat.
Hi, this is Chloe from British Heart Foundation. How can I help?
Search BHF Cardiac Nurses.
The people of Britain have bought loads of noise-cancelling headphones. With a Barclaycard Rewards credit card, you could get cash back on eligible purchases and no fees on spending overseas. What you buy is your business. Rewarding you is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 28.9% APR representative variable and 28.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
At Amazon, over 50% of deliveries now come with less packaging or with no added packaging at all. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where you chat with friends, where your neighbour's daughter practices guitar, and where we deliver your new noise-cancelling headphones in the manufacturer's packaging. Ah, much better. Reduced packaging from Amazon. We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on 2025 Amazon packaging data across the UK and EU.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
How to beat the blockade. That's what we're going to do. 7:20 is the time. Tips, whether it's how to turn your garden into a mini market garden, whatever, making your vegetables, your potatoes and your tomatoes or whatever, and also how you could drive your car, your van, your motorbike. Jagdeep, you'll be the first caller on that. Now, some of the front pages I can tell you about, some of the front pages I can't, because of the restrictions under which we work on a local election or national election in Scotland and Wales, rather ancient restrictions, but they must be observed. So I can't tell you the front page story in the Daily Telegraph. I can tell you their picture is of Martin Anstey, former copper, identified as the British worker airlifted from a cruise ship at the centre of that rat-borne virus outbreak. Two passengers now are self-isolating in the UK. There does seem a degree of confusion, which, given the fact that the captain was telling people that someone died of natural causes when, in fact, it was the rat virus, is hardly surprising. We have a full report of that in a few moments' time. I can tell you, the front page of The Guardian, agree to peace deal or face fresh wave of bombing, Trump tells Iran. I think that was the front... Yep, it's the front page of The Times as well. The Daily Mirror is very much on the local elections, as is the Daily Express, as is the Daily Mail, so we can't do that either. But let's finish with, here we go. Cruise Brits rat bug hell is the... That's all doing words, that one, isn't it? That's a classic song headline. Cruise Brits rat bug hell. Five doing words, as we used to say over at the Sun, times like this. And for the Metro, SOS Save Our Summer Holiday Flights. Now, the LBC app has more details of the former copper-turned-wildlife photographer seriously ill with the rat virus. And I'm quickly looking. No, I can't do that either. A lot of the online offerings are political, so I think we'll leave that there. We'll tell you about City AM when we speak to its editor-in-chief later in the show. Now, Jagdeep is in Slough. Jagdeep, give us a tip. Give us all a tip. How to save money. This one's on the roads, I think, isn't it? Good morning.
Nick, good morning. Thanks for
not at all, call. Sir. Thank you for calling me.
You know what I did? I drive a lot, and
do you drive a lot because you have to, or you just enjoy?
Okay, school runs, yeah. For work, right. And then obviously, you know, I go to the gym every day, and I think something that I when this all kicked off, I started just being a bit more cautious on how I drive and just not being heavy footed, and I realized by just sticking to a speed limit. And just being a bit more aware of the roads, I ended up getting, like, I think, about nearly 50 or 60 miles to a full tank than what I normally used to get.
What sort of car do you drive?
So I drive a Land Rover Defender.
Oh, quite a big beast.
Yeah.
Not very aerodynamic, I'm afraid.
No, it's not. But that's something I noticed, to be honest. And then the other thing is, like, you know, I'm just going into the supermarket, and rather than just picking anything willy-nillingly, just being a bit more aware, like, what's on offer? What, do I really need this? Or do I really need to buy this?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. So, yeah, that's one of the ways that I've been doing it, and it's okay.
I don't know if I'm going to break the law here, but when I was a young lad, I lived at the bottom of a very steep hill, and I never had enough petrol in the car, so I would often roll down the hill. The engine would be on, by the way. I'd still have the steering, but I'd knock the car into neutral. Is that legal? Am I breaking the law doing that? I don't happen to... Jack, do you have any idea on that?
Okay, so I've actually done that a couple of times, but this is not...
Are we breaking the law? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I really don't know. But it's like when you're, like, just sort of very slowly approaching an area where, you know, you can just stick it to neutral and then be okay with it.
Yeah.
But I think we'd have to look at someone who could advise us on that.
Yeah, Jagdeep, don't let's admit to it, because there might be a police officer listening. I'm sure someone will ring in. If you got, as I did as a lad... And that I often didn't have enough fuel in my Morris 1100, ask your grandparents. I would just knock it into neutral, roll down the hill and go home. But was I breaking the law? I don't know. Someone will tell me in a moment, I'm sure. Shall we go to other matters and pick up on that headline? The Sun, cruise Brits rat bug hell. I love it. A British tour guide on a cruise ship ravaged by the rat-linked hantavirus was airlifted to hospital yesterday. This as two Britons are reported to be self-isolating at home amid fears they were exposed to the virus. Now, here's footage filmed by a Turkish passenger on board the Hondius, showing its captain, Jan Dobrogowski, saying a man had died overnight due to natural causes.
This is my sad duty to inform you that one of our passengers sadly passed away last night. Tragic as it is, it was due to natural causes, we believe, and also whatever health issues he was struggling with, I'm told by the doctor, were not infectious. So the ship is safe when it comes to that.
Now, that video was taped on the 12th of April, so that means the unfortunate victim obviously died on the night of the 11th of April, and to remind you, we're on May the 7th, so you're knocking on a month. Can you imagine just the mental anguish of what people are going through? Let's go to my favourite consultant virologist. I don't have that many, but he is my favourite. Dr. Chris Smith is at Addenbrooke's Hospital in Cambridge and presents the Naked Scientist podcast. Good to have you on, Dr. Chris. Could have been picked up by someone going bird watching. What is the reality of that as you see it? Hi, Chris.
Good morning. Well, the hantaviruses are not human infections. They're actually an accidental incursion into humans because their natural host are small rodents, mice, rats and so on. And these viruses are distributed across the world. We even have one form of them in the UK. But some of them have a more severe impact on us when they do jump into us than others. And their route into us is when we encounter that natural host, the rodent, or in other words, the mouse or the rat. And not necessarily directly, indirectly, because these animals shed the virus in what they leave behind when they've been in an environment. And the supposed
I'm walking, watching, bird watching, and I have an open cut and I spread on rat pee or something like that.
That's the suggestion that's being entertained by investigators here, because they're desperate to find the source. Because if you can find the source and you know who's been exposed to it, you can immediately rule out all those people who haven't, because the efficiency of spread between humans, we think, is incredibly low because this is not a human infection. So they're entertaining the hypothesis that at least one or two of the people on the ship had been to an area where there were lots of birds, and birds flock to waste dumps. So they went to this tip to see a particular bird species or group of birds, and they may have encountered an environment where there were lots of rodents. Rodents are obviously drawn to rubbish because they pick through it and they find things to eat. Yep. And if they had contaminated the environment, people going through that environment could, and usually it's not so much blood contact. Bites allegedly can transmit this virus, but much more common is going to be breathing in particles which have been shed by the animals into the environment in feces and urine. The virus is stable in the environment for a period of time, so it can then be wafted up into the air. You breathe it in and you then get lung infection, which is the commonest way we've documented this happening.
How survivable is it, Chris?
It varies according to what type of hantavirus you get. There's a cluster of these viruses. The family's got maybe as many as 35, 36 different hantaviruses that are capable of, have been documented infecting humans, and the mortality/lethality varies according to which one you get. The form that's common in Asia and in Europe, actually, is the so-called Old World hantavirus, and the mortality of that may be 15-20%, something in that region. The Americas, or New World hantaviruses, which we first began to document in the early 90s, so we've known about this for a long time, and we do see sporadic cases. There have been tens of cases in that geography. The mortality for that is higher, and it may be as high as 50%, and that's the group of viruses that are overlapping with that include the one that's linked to this particular outbreak.
Two Brits reportedly at home self-isolating. Are you concerned with the wisdom of that, or pretty relaxed about it, Chris?
This is probably the best way to manage the cases because, as I say, all the evidence we have over decades is that these viruses are not efficient at transmitting between humans. And if it were the case, they efficiently transmitted among humans. If you think if it's this easy to pick them up in Argentina, which is where we think this started, then half the population of Argentina would be suffering with hantaviruses, and they're not. So the transmission rate between people is at best low. Therefore, if you've got people who are at low risk having been exposed, but they're not documented as having been infected, the best thing to do is to keep tabs on them for the period of the incubation period. We know what that is. It's long. It's up to 2 months. But keeping tabs on people and assuming that they're probably a very low threat until they become symptomatic, if they're going to become a threat at all, is a good way to then keep them safe, keep them well, but also maintain good public health eyes on the situation.
Thanks as ever, Chris. Dr. Chris Smith, consultant virologist at Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge, presenter of the Naked Scientist podcast. Abhinash, you'll be the next caller on the cost of living. I hope you can hold. We'll do it the other side of the news. My thanks to Patrick D, who sent a photograph of a Morris 1100, a reminder for you. It was my first car and I loved it very, very much. Paul, who's in Baku, says, I don't agree with these tips on the fuel tank. I lived in Egypt for many years. You never knew if the next fuel station had fuel, so always keep your tank above half. Paul, thank you. Anne in St. Albans, we've been awash with endless choices of food. We waste so much of it. Vegetables in pots can be raised from plug plants and seed in the smallest of outside spaces. It saves fuel, plus wear and tear on the car, and is healthy. Abhinash, you'll be the next caller on that. Also later in the show.
Employed by Sainsbury's for 15 years, but sacked after a run-in with a notorious champagne shoplifter. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with the exclusive.
Plus also coming out, Ach du liebe Zeit.
Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to.
A German sues a holiday firm after losing out on the 6 a.m. dash for sun loungers. Have you ever been a victim of that? Come on, do you go down and put your towels over the sun lounger before you even go to the buffet breakfast? We'll be taking your stories on that. 7:31 breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
UK health officials say the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. It's after revealing two British people on board a cruise ship at the centre of an outbreak have returned home and are now self-isolating. President Trump says the US has held very good talks in the past 24 hours with Iran to try and end the war, but Tehran says it's still considering an American proposal to end the conflict. And in-person voting is getting underway across England, Scotland and Wales. Elections for the Welsh and Scottish parliaments are taking place, while local council and mayoral votes are being held in England. LBC weather cloudy for most, with some showers for northern and western parts of the UK, some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15. Degrees.
With rock-bottom approval ratings for the government, today voters head to the ballot box to mark Keir Starmer's report card. With his premiership under pressure, how big could the fallout be?
From 10 p.m, Lewis Goodall.
As the polls close, join me, Lewis Goodall, as we break down what's happening across the country and what it means for politics to come.
From 6 a.m, Nick Ferrari.
What will new governments mean for Scotland and Wales? I'll bring you all the fallout, the biggest names in politics, and importantly, hear your views too.
From 1 p.m, Sheila Fogarty.
Stay with LBC throughout the day as I bring you the declarations and drama set to shape the country for years to come.
Election Night Live, tonight from 10 p.m. Listen and watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature and beautiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Beautiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind is a bold and uplifting new musical based on the incredible true story of 13-year-old William Kamkwamba, who dared to dream big against impossible odds. Don't miss the West End premiere, playing now at Soho Place for a strictly limited run until the 18th of July. Book now at sohoplace.org.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London, on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine, and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Beat the blockade with our series of tips. Abinash, you will be the next caller on that. Just coming up on 7.35, let's bring into the conversation Christian May, who's editor-in-chief at City AM and joins me now. Late night last night, Christian, by the way. Good morning.
Is that what it looks like?
Do you know, no, you look well, actually. Seeing as your awards last night, you look in pretty good order, I have to say.
It was a big bash in the city, I have to say, and there was a tremendous after-party, at which I did show my face, but I was worried that today might be a bit like, remember when... There's always those ITV Good Morning presenters who turn up on their sofa sort of in black tie and hungover after the telly awards. I thought we might be a bit like that, but I think I've got my act together.
No, you look very, very fresh. Congratulations to you, and I hope the night went well for you. Now, we're a little bit restrained here from which the headlines we can talk about, but fortunately yours, and I'll ask you to merge it one with the FT, the Financial Times. Your paper, City AM, talks of firms issue price alert. The Financial Times talks about record US fuel exports. Can you merge them together and what it means for Mrs. Jones in Clapham? Christian?
I think I can, Nick. Yes, we'll come on to the US oil export story, which is fascinating in its own right. But just to put it into domestic context, the impact now of the sustained, and it is sustained, energy price rises is feeding its way through to corporate Britain in quite a noticeable way. UK PLC, if you like, is now warning that it's approaching breaking point when it comes to these supply chain cost increases and inflation. FTSE 100 retailer Next, who we often talk about as being a great success story, has warned, alongside JD Weatherspoon yesterday, both had results out, that they are going to take a multi-million pound hit. Next has said that it's going to take a cost of just under 50 million quid, which is an upgrade on what they had forecast about a month ago of 15 million quid in additional costs. They say they're going to have to put their prices up moderately in the UK, but much more substantially in their European operations. Weatherspoon said its profit targets are now at risk. It's got substantial increases in costs. They've joined all sorts of other companies, the likes of Sainsbury's and others, who have said this is really going to affect us. On the macro level, as you point out, in the US now, US fuel exports, this is from the largest oil-producing country in the world these days, have surged to a record level as Europe and Asia lean on American energy supplies to make up for the shortfalls caused by the war. Now, there are some voices who say that this is quite encouraging for the US. They're obviously making some good money from this, but they're not immune from the elevated costs themselves. Fuel prices in the US, while lower here, as they always are, lower than here, as they always are elevated as well. And there is now talk that if those fuel prices, domestic gas prices, continue to climb in the US, then they might have to put a cap, even possibly an end to the exports of oil and gas from the US, which would then shake up the prices in the industry in the US. So nobody is immune from these challenges.
A shake-up there and another shake-up on the high street. WH Smith became, was it TG Jones or TJ Jones? I can't remember. That looks in trouble now. Christian?
It is feeling a bit of pressure, to put it mildly. About 150 of the 480 stores that were formerly part of WH Smith will be closed in a restructuring plan that's been announced by the new owner, that's Modella Capital. They had to change the name of the stores they took over to TG Jones. They've actually blamed that enforced name change on as one of the reasons why those stores have been struggling so much, people just not making the connection, they say. I think there are other reasons going on as well.
Yes.
They said they haven't taken this decision lightly. There will be job losses. They're going to try and save and salvage some of the more profitable parts, which are often in stations and at airports in particular. They say that in addition to struggles with their own turnaround and strategy plan, they're struggling like everybody else from increased costs, increased taxes, etc. But it's a business which was in trouble. That's why it was snapped up by private equity in the first place. They do want to try and turn it around, but it's proving very difficult.
Lastly, words I never thought I'd say. Why are all eyes on Darlington?
Well, not just on Darlington, but the skies above Darlington. Up there in County Durham, it's become the first part of the UK to experience the future, you might say. Amazon is now the first retailer in the UK that is launching a drone delivery service, and Darlington is the area they have chosen. So, packages weighing less than 2.2 kilos, so not a huge amount so far, but everyday items, beauty products, batteries, bits and bobs like that, can be now delivered by drone, dropped into your garden or patio or terrace from within about 7.5 mile radius of Amazon's fulfillment centre up there. So this is very much a test operation, but it's a live test, and they've allowed people to start ordering things, which has been going on. I'm just reading here that the drones deliver parcels up to the size of a shoebox, and they are dropped from a height of 12 feet into the front garden. Now, I suggest that might mean that I don't think they come with parachutes or anything, so you probably don't want to order anything particularly delicate or breakable. But nevertheless, these drones, by the way, are pretty enormous. I mean, it does look like some sort of sci-fi innovation. And in they come, they hover over your garden, and they drop what it is you've just ordered. You know, within an hour or so of you ordering it. So they do say this is the future. And the UK regulators, and indeed the government, are very keen on this sort of thing. And the Civil Aviation Authority has just this week, in fact, announced a new round of consultations on the regulations to ensure that the UK becomes a leader in this sort of thing.
Christian, thank you. Christian May, editor-in-chief at City AM, talk the same time tomorrow, 7:40. We're beating the blockade with your tips as to what you're doing. Abinash in Hayes, thank you for holding on the line. What's your tip to everyone? Abinash, good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. It's Hello. Lovely to talk to you. I just want to say thank you for what you do. You're a brilliant broadcaster.
Well, I don't know about that. You're not listening to
me. No, you are. You are. But, I do listen quite regularly. Just wanted to say this. So there's a couple of things. So I have, especially with petrol prices. So I have a diesel car. I have a Mercedes GLC 2 litre.
Right.
And of course, it's a lump. Yes. The thing was that, so I'm paying nearly £80 for half a tank of petrol.
Right.
And so one of the things, I know, it's a simple tip, is because actually on my car, I'm sure it's on other cars as well, it has an economic mode.
Right.
So if you set it on E, because what you actually see is, because on the sensors, you can see where it says D and whatever.
Yeah.
The sensor actually turns green.
Right.
So actually you can see yourself that you're actually in an economic mode.
So what's that doing to the engine, do we think?
I think it's basically, it's because it's the way you drive as well, of course, because one of the things, it has the adaptive cruise control.
Yeah.
So basically what you're doing, because it's controlling itself, you're not necessarily pressing the brake or pressing the accelerator yourself. So what it's doing is saving you. Because basically, I think every time you press the brake and you have to then press the accelerator, it create more fuel and use more. I'm getting about another sort of 10, 15 miles to the gallon.
Well done.
And that's huge for that. So that's one tip. And the other one, I'd say, is because I volunteer for a community garden at Sunshine of Hounslow in Ealing. Okay. And the thing is that we encourage people, and so we have like 60 raised beds, we encourage people to grow their own food.
Oh, brilliant.
And from seeds, you know, we have poly, tents and things like that. So from seeds, they transplant them into their raised beds.
Yep.
And that way they can grow their own food.
Abinash, thank you for tips on both those, self-driving, and thank you for your very kind words about the show. Enjoy your day today. We will have more tips in a moment, but we move to other news. And farewell to the man who invented TV's rolling news.
This news service will be called the Cable News Network, and will program continually updated half-hour segments of national news, business news, sports and features 24 hours a day.
As for young Jessica, she appears to be doing all right, considering. Cameras and microphones have been dropped down. Jessica can be heard to call to her mother. She has been singing, humming, and occasionally crying.
On the morning of August 2nd, thousands of people in Kuwait City woke up to war.
By mid-morning, thousands of troops had swarmed into the capital. Most had driven the 80 miles from the Iraqi border in a push that began at 2 a.m.
It is now official. CNN projects that Donald Trump has been elected president, defeating Vice President Kamala Harris.
This is CNN.
Well, those are some of the highlights. Ted Turner launching it in 1980. The 1987 rescue of the girl down the well, Jessica McClure, which certainly led to a lift in viewing figures. CNN reporting on the first day of the Iraqi invasion in Kuwait and the moment CNN projected President Trump's victory over Kamala Harris just a couple of years ago. Now, it's worth telling you what an extraordinary job he did. He inherited in 1969, acquired a struggling Atlanta TV station offering old films, cartoons and sitcoms, to which in due course he added broadcast rights for the Atlanta Braves baseball team and the Atlanta Hawks in basketball, both of which he came to own, and then had the idea of Rolling News. It's created a number of stars. One of whom joins me now, Christiane Amanpour, of course, chief international anchor for CNN, hosts the global podcast. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files and joins me now. How long have you been on the books of CNN, Christiane? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. I'm so glad you're paying tribute, because what a giant.
Yeah.
And I've been there almost 43 years.
Goodness.
So almost almost from the beginning, and really powered by the absolute commitment and belief in Ted Turner's vision. You know, he was a savant. He was absolutely way ahead of every wave. He created every wave. And the words we use today with abandon, like startup or video on demand, he created that with CNN. It was the first ever 24/7 network, which he then sent international. And then it became the indispensable behemoth that it is.
Was he a fulfilled man?
I believe absolutely so. He had a very difficult childhood. He was made to go to boarding school when his parents moved for some business trip, and they took his sister with them. He was 4 years old, and he was committed to this boarding school, which he told me even years, decades later, that he really hated. He just wanted to be at home. And I think that definitely inspired, or not inspired, but caused a sense of never wanting to be alone in his life until the day he died. But having said that, despite all those difficulties, he powered through all those difficulties and was such an inspiring and positive figure. And, you know, it wasn't just news. It was the environment. It was climate change. He was ahead of all of that for so long. He brought the bison herd back to America single-handedly. He became the biggest single private landowner, not to develop, but to preserve and conserve. No buildings apart from his own very modest homes on those pieces of land. And he was just absolutely phenomenal. He sorted out an organization called Nuclear Non-Proliferation, NTI. He tried to corral loose nukes. Mm. He was the first of the modern day philanthropists. When in the late 90s, he gave $1 billion to the UN, and on it goes.
Is he a boss who believed in carrot or stick or a bit of both, Christiane?
You know, I'm not sure that it was carrot or stick. He led by example. I do not recall anybody being disciplined. I don't recall anybody being particularly rewarded. It wasn't like it is today. We were a real collective. We were a whole bunch of young students who had graduated, undergraduated, in other words, hadn't gone to get masters yet. We believed that CNN, this startup, would be our journalism school on the job, and then we would go to the big leagues. And pretty much the whole network was populated with people like us. We were the grunts. We were the foot soldiers. There was a small level of experienced, professionals. But even they were very few and far between. It was really a startup. I think that's what's made it so enduring for us and why we are so proud to have worked for somebody like Ted Turner. And you can't really say that too much these days. I mean, he was a boss that was beloved and admired.
Lastly, when you heard the news yesterday, what was your fondest memory of the years that you've known and worked with Ted Turner?
Well, I was incredibly sad, and I can't imagine a CNN without Ted, even though he was out of executive functions for the network for the last 20-plus years. But he inspired the network, and I tell you, it does take people sometimes to lead the charge. My fondest memories were when he insisted that we be in Baghdad during the first Gulf War, i.e. on the enemy side, because he insisted throughout, and CNN is committed to covering all sides of any story. And I think my fondest memories also are just in the last years of seeing him. I'll give you, 3 years ago, went to see him at his estate in Atlanta, and, you know, he was infirm. He couldn't really walk properly on his own, and yet his beloved fly fishing, he had these dedicated people, and we watched him, watched them pull on his big, you know, the knee-high galoshes,
the waders,
put him in a, the waders, put him in a movable chair and take him to the banks of the river where he could fish.
Oh, what a vision you've painted. Christiane, thank you. Always enjoy speaking with you. Privilege to talk with you. Christiane Amanpour, Chief International Anchor for CNN, started there all those years ago. Of course, you catch her on the Global Podcast. Christiane Amanpour presents The X-Files with James Rubin. Just to tell you, he's died aged 87, as Christiane said there. He was slowed in later years by what's called Lewy body dementia. But what a body of work he left behind. All right, coming up after the news...
One of Britain's most popular television presenters, our BBC colleague Jill Dando, has died after being attacked outside her London home.
That's Martin Lewis announcing the death of Jill Dando back in 1999. We're going to be speaking with legendary crime journalist Jeff Edwards. He's just published a book, another big figure in the world of news, actually, certainly in crime. And that's one of the stories he's covered. So that's after 7:45 LBC News headlines. They're from Dominic Ellis.
Two British people are self-isolating at home after returning from a cruise ship at the centre of a fatal outbreak of hantavirus. President Trump says the US has held very good talks with Iran to try and end the conflict in the Middle East, and in-person voting is getting underway for elections across England, Scotland and Wales. LBC weather. Cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne. We're very busy on the Surrey stretch of the M25 clockwise between junctions 5 at Sevenoaks and 6 at Godstone. It was after an accident that happened earlier. Better news on the M20 westbound at junction 11 at Hythe. All the lanes are now back open and those delays are beginning to ease. Also, the problems continue at the Woolwich Ferry. No service at all. That's because of a technical problem, and there are restrictions on the A2, the Old Kent Road eastbound in Bermondsey, and that's following an accident at Albany Road. On the trains, Greater Anglia services southbound are delayed via Shelford, and that's because of a signal failure. But better news for Southern and Thameslink, those delays via East Croydon have cleared.
LBC.
Wrong tool for the job? Don't make that mistake with your van. Get up to 30% off selected new Toyota vans with a warranty up to 10 years or 100,000 miles with every qualifying routine service. Visit your nearest Toyota centre or visit toyota.co.uk/van savings for more details. Savings on selected vans ordered by the 30th of June 2026. UK residents, see toyota.co.uk for full details. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. Download it now from your app store.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London, on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, what you thought you were getting may not be what you ended up with. From unexpected site fee increases, running costs, a huge depreciation in value, many owners feel they've been missold. If you think this might be you, holidayparkadvicecentre.co.uk could help you receive the compensation you're entitled to. Text ASSIST to 78900 to find out more. That's ASSIST to 78900.
The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind is a bold and uplifting new musical based on the incredible true story of 13-year-old William Kamkwamba, who dared to dream big against impossible odds. Don't miss the West End premiere, playing now at Soho Place for a strictly limited run until the 18th of July. Book now at sohoplace.org.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with Well Kid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The Well Kid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorized for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345-6060-973.
Very much a news theme running through the programme at the moment, isn't it? 7 minutes before 8. Just remind you, as I told you at the top of the show, we do have to do slightly different stories on a day like this because we are very, very politically constrained because of the local elections in much of England and, of course, in Scotland and in Wales. So staying with the news theme, well, one of the best-known crime reporters on Fleet Street when it once existed has a book out called The Murder Guy. That was his sort of nickname. Jeff Edwards, you'll hear from him in just a moment. Here's some of the stories he covered during his career.
A massive car bomb in Northern Ireland has killed more than 20 people, including children. It exploded in a busy shopping street in Omagh, County Tyrone.
One of Britain's most popular television presenters, our BBC colleague Jill Dando, has died after being attacked outside her London home.
We need to go immediately to the newsroom. It's 9:14. You're listening to LBC 97.3.
Nick, we're trying to get details at the moment. Very, very sketchy and a confused picture, but we have details of some kind of incident in or around Liverpool Street Station.
Yes, through the 1998 Omar bombing by the IRA, the death of Jill Dando in 1999, and the London bombings in 2005 with a much younger voice, Nick Ferrari, throwing to Tom Bateman, my then LBC colleague. He's elsewhere now, but the person who covered those stories and many more, Jeff Edwards. Now, Jeff, what a career. He was on the London Evening News. Some of you will need to ask your grandparents about that. The News of the World, the London Daily News, Daily Star, Sunday People, but a long stint at the Daily Mirror. Jeff Edwards joins me now to talk about the book, The Murder Guy. Good to have you on, Jeff. OK, what's the biggest case you didn't crack? Don't lead me into trouble with libel lawyers or anything like that. But is there a story you came tantalisingly close, but you just couldn't nail it? Good morning, Chief Inspector Edwards.
Good morning, Mr. Ferrari. It's lovely to be speaking to you again after all this time. I knew you would throw me a curved ball like that. And of course, I can't readily think of one that I absolutely failed to crack, except, well, I guess, you know, Jill Dando remains absolutely intriguing. Yeah. I have certain views on that, which I can't really air here with you. No, otherwise, we might find ourselves in difficulties.
Was that frustrating that you weren't able to actually nail it or land it or get the nugget you needed from a detective, Jeff?
I think the police weren't able to get the nugget they really needed to satisfy a jury and get a conviction. The point being, I've never known a story that set so many false hairs running. And quite frankly, as a reporter, Nick, I was always a pragmatic in my approach. And I used to sort of think, yes, you know, as a journalist, our job is to find things to interest the public and to write about. But also, I think it's no point in just writing a load of nonsense.
Yep.
And quite frankly, the Jill Dando murder, you know, talk of it being a revenge attack by a Serbian warlord who had a grudge against the British government, all sorts of spurious theories came up. And all along, I thought, just look at the evidence, just look at the facts. This has got to be somebody, you know, local. It's got to be something extraordinarily low-key in lots of ways, yes, but with fatal consequences. And I thought all the evidence, and I've covered, you know, look at the title of the book. I've probably covered about 1,000 murders in my career. You know, I've seen, and a lot of those were what I call professional assassinations, either for political reasons or organised crime-type jobs, and I'd never seen one. I struggle to think of another one where only one shot was fired, for instance.
How interesting.
I think the reason only one shot was fired was the gunman could only fire one shot, and that's because he didn't have a proper gun. It was a reactivated or a kind of a museum piece or a collector's item that had been skillfully by somebody else made to fire again. But these weapons usually can only fire one bullet. And it was some kind of semi-automatic pistol, and the cartridge case was on the path by her body. And that showed signs of what they call crimping, which means that, you know, you can get the gun, but you can't get the ammunition.
Right.
And somebody had kind of put together an ersatz round. It wasn't professional, but it was sufficient to work with, you know. And I think the killer got very lucky that day, and I think Jill got very unlucky, yeah. I'm sad to say.
Right, decades in the job. It starts out with an interesting contact with a police officer when you were a teenage lad. But let's talk about the relationship between journalists and senior officers. We've had commissioners, yeah. I won't name them, commissioners of the Met, some of whom realised the importance of it. One who particularly tried to police against the importance of relationships between... How should the relationship be run, Jeff?
Well, I don't think we'll ever see a day again when the relationship was run as it was in my career, when you could... There were formal channels and there were informal channels, and the informal channels were more important, I used to think, than the formal channels, which was... that you could, you know, if there was a big case, a murder or whatever, you could call up somebody who was running that inquiry and say, can we have a discreet meeting, a private meeting, and you tell me what you really think. But it was a trusting relationship. It had to be. So they knew that I wouldn't just run off and write, you know, anything that first came to hand.
Well, you blow all your contacts. No one would ever tell you anything. You just need to do that once and you're dead in the water.
Absolutely. Trust is like virginity, as I was once told. You only lose it once. And that was actually said to me by a fairly senior policeman. And that was my whole base. The whole basis of my life was around those kind of relationships. And it's, you know, there were 30,000 people working at Scotland Yard in my day, but it was still a village. And, if it took you 10 years to build a good reputation, but 10 seconds to lose that, this word would soon get around that you weren't a guy that you could be trusted.
I've got to get to the news. So in a couple of sentences, the murder guy, if people go to their shop for their half-term holiday or whatever to buy the murder guy, what are they going to get? What are they going to read, Jeff?
They're going to see a lot of really interesting inside track views, I think. The kind of the inside story on how things happened, how things worked between people like me and organisations like the Metropolitan Police and other forces. So I think they're going to learn a lot of stuff that they probably have never seen properly portrayed before, either in a book or on television.
Good speaking with you. Hope to catch up with you again soon. Jeff Edwards, thank you. Former chief crime correspondent at the Daily Mirror, also crime correspondent on a number of titles. The book is The Murder Guy, Secrets, Lies, Killers and Villains, The Inside Story of Britain's Biggest Crimes. It is out now, published by Mirror Books, and it's £10.99. Jeff, good luck with that. Music means we move on. And coming up after the news, the idea that the police will now be cracking down using every power at their disposal to tackle antisocial youths, but the measures to which they go might surprise you. In other news, have you been let down on supposed exchange day and cost you thousands when you try to sell a house? We'll go into that in more detail. And... composed by John Williams for the Harry Potter. Harry Potter films have taken $7.7 billion. They celebrate their 25th anniversary this year. I'll be asking you later in the show, what's the magic of Harry Potter? News on LBC is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation, this is LBC.
From Global's newsroom, two British people are isolating at home after returning from a cruise ship struck by an outbreak of hantavirus. They left the vessel at St Helena and flew back to the UK via Johannesburg. Health officials here say the pair are not showing any symptoms and insist the risk to the public remains very low. Consultant virologist Dr. Chris Smith has told Nick this morning self-isolation is the best way to manage the virus.
All the evidence we have over decades is that these viruses are not efficient at transmitting between humans. And if it were the case, they efficiently transmitted among humans, if you think if it's this easy to pick them up in Argentina, which is where we think this started, then half the population of Argentina would be suffering with hantaviruses, and they're not. So the transmission rate between people is at best low.
President Trump says the US has held very good talks in the past 24 hours with Iran to try and end the war. But Tehran says it is still considering an American proposal to end the conflict. Donald Trump insists Iran is keen to negotiate and has threatened a higher level of bombing if no agreement is reached.
In-person voting is underway across England, Scotland and Wales. Elections for the Welsh and Scottish parliaments are taking place, while a series of local council and mayoral votes are being held in England. Polls close at 10 o'clock tonight. A former Sainsbury's shop assistant has told LBC that his soul is crushed after he was dismissed following an altercation with a thief. Gary MacArthur lost his job in March after escorting a shoplifter out of a store in West Wickham in South London last December. It's understood he'd received a previous warning about tackling a shoplifter. Mr MacArthur has told us that his job meant everything to him.
I am more in touch with the older community that came into the store. I'd greet them, I'd hug them, I'd chat with them. We'd laugh, we'd cry sometimes. So there's a real sense of love and loyalty for me and the colleagues and customers.
Sainsbury's says it asks staff to stick to guidelines specifically designed to keep everyone safe. You can hear more on this story with Nick in the next half hour. And Arsenal will face the holders Paris Saint-Germain in the Champions League final later this month. The French side drew 1-1 with Bayern Munich in Germany last night, meaning they progressed 6-5 on aggregate. In the city, the FTSE 100 just reopened at 10,438. It closed up 219 points yesterday. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells later for eastern and southern areas with a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
May we have your attention? Introducing the Volkswagen May event. Get an extra £1,000 towards your finance deposit with Solutions PCP 7.9% APR representative across the range, including the amazing Golf, Tiguan and all-electric ID3. Major. I said it was in May, right?
Yes.
Ends Monday the 18th of May. Visit your nearest Volkswagen retailer. You may just find the car you've been looking for.
Stop it.
Participating retailers. Excludes T-Roc ID bars and Golf GTI 50. ID3 from stock only. Indemnities may be required. Registered by 30th of August. Volkswagen Finance.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 5 minutes after eight on Thursday, May the 7th, cracking down on antisocial behaviour. How parents could face criminal and civil consequences if they fail to control their children. It's an antisocial behaviour experiment. It's one of our major cities. Where is it? How does it work? And what are the main ideas behind it? We'll give you a full report in a few moments. Plus, more of a report on the story you've been hearing on the LBC News Bulletin.
Employed by Sainsbury's for 15 years, but sacked after a run-in with a notorious champagne shoplifter. I'm LBC's Helen Hoddenott with the exclusive.
25 years since the first Harry Potter movie. It is now a $7.7 billion franchise, and I'm not even talk to you about how much money has been made from the books. But did it turn you on to reading? Was it one of the first films you ever saw as a child, or indeed you took your children to? I've told you many times before, I have never seen a Harry Potter movie, ever, and I've never read one of the books. I'm sure they are absolutely brilliant, but you'll need to tell me what I've missed out on. It just didn't kind of drop with me and the ages of my children. I just kind of missed out. In other news, if you can miss out on a property sale or purchase.
It's Rick Kelsey here. I had a property sale collapse just 12 minutes before the deadline to exchange contracts, costing me thousands. I've written about why the law needs to change to stop this happening. I'll be sharing my story with Nick shortly.
Those exchange and completion dates, that nervousness, will it go wrong? Will I be okay? If you're fortunate enough to have owned properties, you'll know exactly of which I speak. Have you been caught like Rick? You'll hear that later in the show. And off to the sunshine.
Deutschland, Deutschland, über alles,
well done. The German who successfully sued a holiday firm after losing his 6 a.m. desk for the sun loungers. It's late in the show.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Talking about magic, we're going to miss our own little bit of magic there after tomorrow, but that's another story for another time. We go to a police operation in the Midlands, seeing parents held responsible for their children's anti-social behaviour. It's Nottingham. Nottinghamshire Police say they'll use every power at their disposal to tackle the issue. Before I give you more details, does that hit home for you literally?
Are your homes, is your house, your flat, your apartment, whatever, plagued by noisy youths, motorbikes up and down, kids playing football against the wall, utter irresponsibility, and most distressing of all, parents who, well, they don't give a damn. Well, ultimately, some families could lose their council house accommodation as the ultimate option. LBC's Midlands reporter, George Icke, was given access to what's called Operation View with the Nottinghamshire officers.
It's a hot Tuesday afternoon in Nottingham city centre, and I'm joining officers out on patrol to try and tackle the corrosive effects of antisocial behaviour. After a short briefing, it's time to jump on board the van with police on the lookout for repeat offenders. Sergeant Kai Kemish is taking us to some of the known hotspots, including back alleyways.
This is one area where they come because, as you can see, we've done a bit of a loop round and it's just off the main sort of market square. You can see that there is graffiti and stuff that happens in these alleyways because ultimately it's out of sort of quite so much line of sight.
After that, we called into a fast food restaurant which has been subjected to appalling behaviour to see how staff there are coping. LBC's been shown the body cam as a teenage boy was arrested after throwing things from the roof of that restaurant at the staff down below.
Stop where you are now! Stop where you are!
What are you doing? That's my own.
Right, admit it, you're under arrest.
You're taking me home then.
You're under arrest in a minute, mate.
No, take me home, man.
But it's very much not your decision at the minute, mate.
Please, man, allow it, bro. I didn't do nothing.
Thankfully, they've seen the number of incidents falling. As we're continuing our patrols, a man has told officers there's a group of teenagers intimidating members of the public.
We've had a report of 5 to 6 males in balaclavas potentially causing a bit of a disturbance in the city. So we're just trying to locate them at the moment.
And within seconds, they're spotted and the chase begins.
Yeah, you've got bail cons not to be in the city centre, haven't you?
This teenager is already on police bail and he's been told not to come back to the city centre. So now it's time for him to be taken home, and it's safe to say he wasn't happy to see the police, or me for that matter, and he's not telling the police the name of his guardian or where they live.
So you do know a name then, don't you? Because it's on to in your phone.
It's another on to.
Oh, lovely. I can't, I'm done talking to him.
And if you thought that was colourful, when we got to his home, he tried to kick me as he was brought out of the van, told officers he wanted his seized possessions back, and later told me what he'd do to me.
We can't have your bally back, because that's what we're going, we're seizing the bally, but you can have everything else back.
Why does that to record my people? Come record my people, they get me trampled. I'm not doing to you. Old men just smash your head in. Everyone.
Where's Dad gonna be?
I don't know. Stop asking me questions.
And it's not the first time he's been arrested. PC Josh Dowdy told me about that after he'd been handed over to his auntie.
There wasn't much of a reaction because I think it's such normal behaviour now, and it's every day, every other day, that I think it's just normal.
How many times have you dealt with him personally?
I wouldn't be able to count. It's every day.
The 12-year-old had his balaclava and 5 vapes seized from his bum bag. This new approach started back in January, and so far 10 known troublemakers have been identified by police, with dedicated officers working alongside them to try and tackle their behaviour.
LBC's George Icke filing that first-class report, 12 after 8. Let's turn first to Dal Babu. Dal is a former chief superintendent of the Metropolitan Police and joins me now. Good to talk to you again, Dal. The sights and sounds that you heard there with your colleagues up in Norway, your former colleagues, now you're at the job in Nottingham, come as no surprise to you. How widespread is that for the men and women in the forces? Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I think antisocial behaviour continues to be a problem. I recall when I was in the police dealing with an estate in North London where we had a similar kind of issue with a group of young people who were causing mayhem, and we basically worked with the local authority, with the housing sector, to basically make sure that they understood the consequences of their behaviour. And what we did was we did joint visits to the families, and I always recall on one occasion going to the home address and speaking to a mother, and she listened to this and says, "I'm really, really pleased you're dealing with these youngsters. When are you going to speak to their parents?" Totally oblivious to the fact that her son was one of the main culprits. So it's an issue, but it has to be done in partnership with the local authority, with schools. Some of these children will be expelled from schools, but I think really, really important for young people to really understand the consequences. One of the biggest difficulties is that we did away with ASBOs. I got the first ASBO in London, or one of the gangs that were in this North London cohort, and it had a massive impact on the others, because a lot of these youngsters don't expect to be dealt with. So when they get put through that system, and an ASBO then at that time could be dealt with independently. I think what's happened subsequently, the ASBOs were done away with, and they introduced a really complicated system called a criminal behaviour order system.
Dal, what makes young people turn feral in the way that the 12-year-old was being abusive and swearing at police officers and I think tried to kick my colleague?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, sometimes youngsters have pretty horrendous lives, but it's no excuse for them behaving that way, and we don't do them any favours if we don't deal with them. Because the danger is that their behaviour deteriorates. So that's why it's very, very important for the police to work with the local authority, identify the individuals, and make sure that those children understand that there's consequences for that behaviour. And I think working with the parents, working with the guardians is absolutely essential in making that happen.
Lastly, when you and your colleagues were dealing with this field, was there a common denominator with the children or with the parents? Did it often happen with people where there was not enough family engagement? Was there a common theme that you ever explored, Dal?
Well, they're all from the same estate. And I think what had happened is that they'd been allowed, there was no intervention. And I think what stopped that kind of behaviour was when they started having intervention. So it's really, really important for authorities and don't give up. But what we did do was work very, very closely with the local authority, with the housing sector and the police. And I think that made the absolute difference, because otherwise all these different agencies are dealing with these youngsters in a different way.
Grateful for your time, Dal Babu. Thank you. Former Chief Superintendent with the Met. We're going to speak with Dr. Marcellus Baz, who's a community leader and is working in this field, and get his views on that after the news. And then later in the show, a musical that's put together telling the true-ish story of Dave Fishwick, Burnley-born and bred, no ordinary man, self-made millionaire, who spent years helping local people and small businesses by setting up his own bank.
He's from Burnley, not from Barclays. The only Lloyds he knows are Hornsey. And next to TSB, he's really quite the flop.
Bank of Dave's, Dave Fishwick joins us later in the hour. 8:15 LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
Two British people are self-isolating at home after returning from a cruise ship at the centre of a fatal outbreak of hantavirus. President Trump says the US has held very good talks with Iran to try and end the conflict in the Middle East, and in-person voting is getting underway for elections across England, Scotland and Wales. LBC weather. Cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. Delays continue on the southern stretch of the M25, going clockwise from junction 5 at the M26 to 6 at Godstone. It's after an accident that happened earlier. On the A2 in Bermondsey, there are restrictions. This is the Old Kent Road, eastbound at Albany Road, and that's following an accident. The M4's very slow this morning, eastbound onto the elevated section. There are delays of around 20 minutes. On the train, Southwestern Railway services at Basingstoke are disrupted. They're delayed by about 20 minutes. That was after a technical problem from earlier. And also the problems that do continue on the train to Greater Anglia. Southbound services at Shelford are disrupted, and that was also after a signal failure.
This is LBC.
Shout out to the savvy ones tuned in across the UK.
Who? Me?
Yeah, you. The ones who know a good deal when they see one. Like the house proud who protect their manor from broken branches to burst pipes. The dog walkers who take the lead when comparing pet cover for their pampered pooches. And the drivers with breakdown cover belting out those power manners. Here's to all of you making smart choices and finding your insurance at
Go.compare.
Now that's savvy.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Fever Tree Ginger Beer. There's no one quite like you, is there? That fiery character. Warming undertones. Mixed, you make a spirited Moscow Mule. But even on your own, you still have the most delectable kick. Fever Tree. Straight up or mixed. It's a matter of taste.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10K, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
Hey.
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Go all Irish to France with great low prices. With Irish Ferries, you can for less less. Irish Ferries, see you travel differently. T's and C's apply.
This year at Amazon, we're increasing the electric vehicles used for deliveries across Europe to over 10,000. It's a difference you'll notice on your doorstep, where babies are made a fuss of, where we deliver footballs for kids' kickabouts, and where they deliver the football straight into next door's garden.
Can they have their ball back, please?
We're delivering change where it matters, on your doorstep. Based on projected delivery service partner vehicles across the UK and EU by end of 2026.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's get straight to my next contributor, 19 minutes after 8. Dr. Marcellus Baz is a community leader and founder of the Switch Up charity and the Marcellus Baz Foundation. This is to try and tackle the issue of antisocial behaviour from youths, and he joins me now. Doctor, a little bit more on what your foundation does then. What do you seek to do there? Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Nick. So what we seek to do is our services, our provision is designed to support disadvantaged, vulnerable communities affected by crime and violence. And what we do is we tackle three key areas: mental and physical well-being, assistance in crime and violence, and we support them into education, training and employment.
Is there a common denominator that you and your colleagues determine, as I was asking the former senior police officer, Doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think what's happening here is, you know, is that saying, you know, the chickens are coming home to roost. I think, you know, if you look at some of the decisions and things that have been happening, you know, youth services, frontline services have absolutely been degraded, depleted, they're exhausted. I also think that some of the contributing factors are, like, you know, just things like, you know, putting the minimum wage up and the national insurance, which is impacting frontline charities to support and help young people. But also, Nick, just to finish off, I think we need to look at the holistic reason of why these young people are doing what they're doing, the root causes, rather than focusing on the symptoms. And we're being quite reactive in looking at some of the symptoms that we're seeing and saying this is the issue that parents should just be addressing, where it's a societal issue and it takes a village to bring a child up.
Yes, people always say, I don't actually know what that means, but the 12-year-old who's using foul language towards police officers on a regular basis, trying to kick my reporter, how would he be turned around?
So, Nick, first of all, you've got to look at the underlying issues. There might be childhood adverse trauma, you know, abuse, neglect, you know, impact of poverty, in lack of opportunity. I think what we would normally do is look at, firstly, his
hierarchy. But there was a lot of that years ago, wasn't there, Marcellus? In the post-war generation, that pretty much depicted what the situations or prospects were for a lot of people. And I don't recall them using four-letter words with police officers or kicking journalists.
No, absolutely. But things have changed since then, Nick, you know, drastically. You know, the environment's changed and we're a product of our environment. And I think, you know, what we really need to do if we want to not see things like this is have a collective impact model. Like, you
know, what does that mean? What's a collective impact model?
A collective impact model is where we have our politicians, our leaders, you know, the public sector, the private sector, statutory services, voluntary services, all working to the same mission and purpose of trying to support young people away from antisocial behaviour, and which predominantly leads into more serious crime and violence. So, and the other thing is, Nick, just to finish on that as well, I think as a society we're focusing on enforcement too much. You know, our prisons are overflowing. We're releasing prisoners early. We've got probation services are exhausted in reintegrating people. Our judicial system is clogged up. So,
but what about the idea they lose their lastly they use their council accommodation as being floated in Nottinghamshire, where you are? What do you make of that?
That's just going to absolutely, you know, increase that poverty, you know, homelessness.
But why should a 12-year-old who continually causes mayhem in the area, why shouldn't there be some kind of ultimate sanction?
Because we need to be looking more upstream before they fall into that, Nick, rather than trying to.
He might just be a wild youth. Surely you can accept that. You're not going to tell me that you can love bomb everybody out of this, are you?
And Nick, I think, you know, a common language that we all understand is love and hope and having that.
I have
that.
No love or hope for a 12-year-old who chooses to kick my colleague. He needs to go to some kind of institution. YOI.
I absolutely accept that, and I think when you get to that level, there should be consequences. But what I'm trying to say here, this is a national issue, not just a Nottingham issue, and we're seeing this right across the board, and I think we need to be more proactive as a society rather
grateful
than
for your time this morning. Thank you. Dr. Marcellus Baz, you're a community leader and founder of the Switch Up Charity and the Marcellus Baz Foundation. We'll take calls on that. Lee, you will be the next caller, but I've got an opportunity to bring into the conversation someone from the UK Health Security Agency on another matter. Obviously, this is, of course, what's now being called the Death Cruise, that ship, with reports, of course, that a former police officer, Martin Anstey, identified as the British worker, airlifted from a cruise ship at the centre of the rat-borne virus outbreak. Two passengers from the ship, which is stricken with hantavirus, now self-isolating in the UK. Some of those passengers are on board now since the first death was reported for virtually a month. Professor Robin Mayers, Chief Scientific Officer at the UK Health Security Agency, and joins me now. Professor, good to have you on. Some of my listeners are expressing concern at the view that the victims, if I may call them that, are self-isolating. How is that policed? Good morning to you.
Good morning to you too. Yes, and I can understand that people wanted to know more about this. So, as you mentioned, we have two passengers who'd left the cruise ship prior to this outbreak. As people who've been on cruises will know, so people come and go all the time. They left home. They'd arrived back in the UK, and when they became aware of this, they reached out to us to contact us, actually, which we're very pleased with. Thank you very much for that. They are now voluntarily self-isolating at home. We have a number of passengers still on the ship, obviously, who are all healthy as far as we can tell. They'll be repatriated in the coming days, and they also will then go through a period of self-isolation.
But how is it to be determined or ensured that they don't go down to the shops, Professor?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things to say on this one. First of all, this is clearly not the same as COVID. So I really want to stress that. This is not a disease that, you know, if you walk past someone, even if they had it, you're going to pick up. It requires close contact, as far as we know. And actually, the emerging evidence is this is primarily transmitted from people who already have symptoms, not from people who are asymptomatic. So the risk is much, much lower here. In terms of the individuals concerned, there are also, you know, very small numbers of people that we will be focusing on. So we're working very closely with them. Each individual is different. And so clearly, you know, people who are already at home, there's different arrangements. The people that are currently on the ship still, we're making arrangements for, and it's being decided on an individual basis what the best way for them to self-isolate is. But we'll continue to work very closely with them until we believe any possible risk has passed.
Professor, how might it be determined that patient A can be brought back to UK to self-isolate, but we have concerns about patient B, and that should not be the accepted process?
At the moment, all of the passengers still on the ship are asymptomatic, and whilst they remain symptom-free, they will be repatriated. Obviously, in the next day or two, whilst the ship is still on its way, if anyone develops symptoms, we would not be expecting them to self-isolate at home. We'll take them to medical care and follow up that way. But if they are asymptomatic, then actually self-isolation followed by closely monitored by us is the way forwards.
And is it right this is a period perhaps of up to 8 weeks that you have to look out for these symptoms, Professor?
Yeah, so 8 weeks is the absolute maximum. Actually, the kind of emerging expert consensus over recent days has been that 6 weeks is probably a reasonable amount. So that's the period that we're looking at for the isolation. So 45 days, 6 weeks.
Do we know how many Brits are on board, lastly, Professor?
The latest data I have, I think, is that there are 22 British nationals still remaining on board after the ones that have moved. And, of course, nationals from many other countries, yes. All of whom are making their own arrangements like ours.
Well, we must wish them good health. Thank you very much for your time this morning. I appreciate you're a very busy individual. Professor Robin May, Chief Scientific Officer at the UK Health Security Agency, 827. Back to the conversation. It was important to take the professor with the role he has. That's why we sort of dropped it in there, as it were. But Lee's in Rainham to talk about this initiative up in Nottinghamshire. Lee, why do children get turned feral in this fashion? Good morning.
Nick, your caller that that called in just made my blood boil, literally. I mean, he just blames everybody apart from the people that matter. It's the government's fault.
Well, let's be careful because we can't talk too much about politics. You don't think it goes to the parents then, Lee?
Absolutely to the parents.
Right.
We've got feral kids running around. I live in the Medway towns.
Yeah, I do. I know Raynham next to Chatham. Yes, Sitting Bull. Yep. I know them all, yeah.
We've got feral kids here driving around on £600-800 electric scooters, which are, let's be honest about this, they are banned on any public highway or pavement. Mm. You are not allowed to use them, and yet these parents go out and buy them for their children. They've been banned in schools. They're not allowed to take them to schools. We've got gangs of them running around on these scooters that do 20, 30, 40 miles an hour. They're 10, 11 years old. The parents should be held responsible. No one actually made these parents have these kids.
Lee, let me tell you what, as you're speaking, Gordon says we need to control and educate these youths. They wouldn't go on to be criminals and the prisons wouldn't be full. How would you respond to someone?
Absolute rubbish.
Right, tell him why he's wrong.
They get no discipline at home. They are told from a very early age, don't let anybody tell you what to do, and so they go out and do whatever they like. I'm a taxi driver. Mm-hmm. I had an incident literally this week where a boy on an electric scooter came off of pavement. If I hadn't have been as quick on the brakes as I had, he literally pulled out from two cars. I didn't see him to start with. Mm. Went straight across the road, straight in front of my car. I managed to brake. My passenger was like, what's going on?
Yep.
And I did my horn and wound my window down and said, look, son, what are you doing? Are you trying to kill yourself? And all I got was a load of abuse, foul-mouthed abuse, and I got the middle finger.
Now, is this in London or down in Kent? Was this in London or down in Kent?
No, down in Kent in Medway.
Right.
They are just running riot because...
Lastly, the idea, the ultimate sanction would be to take away council accommodation. Where would you be on that, Lee?
Absolutely. Give them a tent, put them in a field and let them live there.
I don't know if we quite go that far. Lee, thank you. Safe driving to you. Well done for hitting the brakes so quickly. AD says, this isn't the youth's problem. It's easy to solve. If you misbehave, you're enlisted into the army for 2 years, and that would be a deterrent for kids who can't behave themselves. That, respectfully, is a shocking idea, because if you're in the military, you want to be with blokes and women who want to be there with you. You don't want your back guarded by someone who's been put in there because he's riding a motorbike up and down at 1 o'clock in the morning, I would suggest. In other matters, coming up after the news.
It's Rick Kelsey here. I had a property sale collapse just 12 minutes before the deadline to exchange contracts, costing me thousands. I've written about why the law needs to change to stop this happening. I'll be sharing my story with Nick shortly.
And if you've had that extraordinary frustration and, of course, financial pressure as well, we want to hear from you. It's 8:31, just turned 8:31. Breakfast with me, Nick Ferrara, here on LBC News Time, then Dominic Ellis.
Speaking to Nick, the head of the UK Health Security Agency has insisted the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. It's emerged that two British people on board a cruise ship at the centre of an outbreak have returned home and are now self-isolating. A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former officers are being investigated for potential misconduct. The police watchdog's looking into how the force handled sexual abuse claims made against the late Harrods owner, Mohammed Al-Fayed. And polling stations are open across England, Scotland and Wales. Elections for the Welsh and Scottish parliaments are taking place, while local council and mayoral votes are being held in England. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with some showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for the east and south, a high of 15 degrees.
This is LBC.
With Amex Platinum, Laura earns points on...
Can I have the soup and the salad and the tart?
And gets access to the Centurion Airport Lounge too.
Let's have a little relax, a little pudding.
And could use her points to travel for...
Las gambas con mantequilla...
And that's because with dining, travel and lifestyle benefits, there's always more with Amex Platinum.
Representative 685.3% APR variable. Annual fee. Terms apply. 18 plus. Subject to approval. Rates may vary.
Noticed a change in your hearing? Well, get a hearing check from Specsavers. Oh, not sure where to start? Well, we're very flexible. Book one online, on the phone, on your lunch break, on Saturdays, on the same day if you're lucky. Oh, you only miss the odd word. But what if the odd words you're missing are nice ones like love you, or important ones like duck? Oh, too expensive, is it? Hmm, all right, we like you. We'll do it for nothing. For free hearing checks, should have gone to Specsavers.
Lost World Play Barn, Dragon Castle Children's Farm, Jumping Pillows, Wallabies, Froggy Stop Play. Tommy Tractor Play Barn, Quadrapillar, Rowing Boats, Aldous Blaze, Meerkats, Honey Pot, Bears. Kids, put on your swimmers for Jungle Splash.
Yeah, let's go, Mum.
Right. Cannon Arena, Lemurs, Jungle Kingdom, Go-Karts, Wave Runner 2, Magical Wood and Cafe.
Nutcatch Adventure Park. Book now at nutcatch.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33. Let's just carve out a minute to do some of the texts and emails that have come in on earlier stories. We were giving you beat the blockade tips, particularly in the field of motoring. You want to take off your roof rack. You want to make sure you're not taking around too much in the boot of your car. Obviously, because of the weight, I the idea of whether it's legal to actually coast. So for many, many years ago, when I lived at the bottom of a hill and I was a young man and I never really had enough money for petrol, sometimes I'd roll all the way home. Anthony in Cumbria says, coasting in neutral in your car is not fuel efficient. You should use engine braking. That's the most efficient way to slow the car down. But surely the engine just ticking over, not pushing any gas through the accelerator's got to help. Dave Reed says it uses more fuel, as the fuel has to keep the engine ticking over. That can't be right, because you're not pushing fuel through the engine. You're just rolling. And by the way, who was the other one said? Here we are. Yeah, Louise. Putting your car in neutral is called coasting. It's reckless driving. You aren't in control of the car. No, I hasten to add, you don't turn the ignition off, because then the steering will lock and you're in a world of pain. So you can't. Anyway, that debate goes on. We're also talking about the demise, it would seem, of some T.J. Hughes, which used to be, stay with me, W.H. Smith. Steve says it's amazing T.J. Hughes, the W.H. Smith takeover, can't exist on the high street due to rising costs, and yet we seem quite capable of taking on multiple barber shops and vape shops along every high street. And Susan Earle, with reference to the planned closure of T.G. Jones, it's my opinion it's no surprise. The state of the buildings, run-down appearance of some of the stores is not inviting. In addition, they don't sell anything you can't purchase anywhere else. So sad W.H. Smith sold out that business. Well, remember, of course, you will find that one, W.H. Smith in airports and other places like that. Now, on to other matters. And are you fortunate enough to have been able to buy or to sell a property? You'll know the importance, then, of exchange and completion, and the worry that something could fall through the cracks. And sadly, it has for our next guest. Rick Kelsey is a personal finance journalist and hosts the podcast The Running Channel. And he had a sale collapse 12 minutes prior to deadline, and he lost thousands of pounds. Here with more details is the man himself. Rick, good to have you on. Just explain, because you have to be aware some people have only ever rented and they're not fortunate enough to put money together for a deposit. What is the difference between exchange, completion? What are the hurdles you have to clear? Rick, good morning.
Nick, thanks for having me this morning. Yeah, so exchange is the big one if you're buying a house, because that's when you exchange a contract, and that means it becomes legally binding. The completion can take place weeks, even a month later. That's the day you actually move into a house and the rest of the money gets exchanged. On the exchange of contracts, it's normally 10% of whatever the cost of your house that gets passed over to the other person's solicitors. But what we have in England and Wales is a system where until that exchange takes place, and this gap where the exchange takes place can be up to 3 or 4 months now. It's been getting longer and longer since COVID. Anybody can pull out, and they can pull out for whatever reason they choose. Maybe they changed their mind, maybe they found something wrong with the house, but maybe they just don't feel like it anymore, and that can cost people thousands.
What happened in your instance?
So a couple of weeks ago, it was our planned exchange day. We had agreed a date, and that by 4 o'clock on that day, we would exchange. And the night before, the person who was buying our house had texted me, we're happy to sign, we'll sign tomorrow. And it had been an arduous process, Nick. Arduous. Around about 130.
Why arduous? Was yours a particularly difficult one to sell? Was it in need of some love? What was the issue?
Well, because the buyers themselves were picky. A solicitor will tell you if you have more than 50 inquiries when you're buying a house or you're selling a house, more than 50 would be a lot.
Yeah.
Less than 50 would be pretty normal. We were up to 134 inquiries.
Oh, Rick.
Oh, Lord.
And we'd had to do extra surveys. We'd had to come back from work on multiple days, and we thought they were picky. But we know it's a difficult time to sell a house at the moment, Nick, so we had to go with it.
So it wasn't just, and have you got your boiler covered and have you got your damp proofing or something?
It was unbelievable things like, give me the square footage of your solar panels and can you confirm that they can fit the roof? Well, of course they can fit the roof. They're on the roof. And this went on for a while. So what you've got to do in this instance is you've got to set a deadline, and that's the only way the solicitors are going to get it over the line. So we set a deadline, and they said they were going to sign. And I, at the time, that night we were on tour with our show in the West End, and we were about to go on stage, and I was getting nervous. It was getting towards 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Nothing had happened, and all of a sudden, I got a text message from the buyer, and she said, it's with great sadness that we'll have to pull out of buying your house due to unforeseen circumstances. They basically changed their mind.
Oh, goodness me. What did that mean? Obviously then, and you're meant to be doing a gig, which is a nightmare, you presumably put in a quick phone call to your solicitor?
Well, I mean, at this point, this is where anyone who's been through this experience, which sadly is hundreds of thousands of people every year due to the archaic system that operates in England, which is so different, it seems, to most places in the world, including Scotland. You put in a series of phone calls. Now, as a financial journalist, I know the pitfalls here. I know you're not supposed to spend money booking movers, making plans on your new house, booking architects for your new house. I know all that. I know you don't spend money. But if you've got young children, like I have, I've got a 3- and a 6-year-old, you have to organise nurseries. You have to organise schools. And when you book yourself into a nursery, how the nursery schemes work, sometimes you'll have to pay in advance. You have to give your nursery codes. This can cost thousands of pounds. We'd already moved our child, our toddler, up to a nursery in the north of England. And we'd moved her school as well. So you have to get the schools back. You have to get the nurseries back. And this is all because someone basically changes their mind and think, you know what, actually, I don't want that house anymore.
Now, just again, for people who've not been fortunate enough to buy, had you got to exchange, and they'd done it after exchange, the 10% deposit reverts to you, as I understand, doesn't it? So they
That's
would
correct.
Let's say you're buying a house for £500,000, they would write off 50 grand if they delayed after exchange.
That's correct. And it's so rare for deals to break down once the exchange has happened.
It's almost unheard
of. But in England, it's almost unheard of. But breaking down beforehand, about 23% of home buyers are now breaking down. But in Scotland, that figure's around about 10%, because the contracts are agreed. There is a legal exchange of solicitors' deeds. There is a legal exchange of contracts at an early stage when people are buying a house, almost after the first week. So this is much less likely to happen in Scotland. And that is the system that needs to happen here, Nick, that the government have been saying they were going to do through secondary legislation, that it was going to come in, that there will be a system here to stop people changing their minds at the last minute.
And as a personal finance expert, have you worked out how much this has cost you and your partner or your wife?
The main cost to us was the childcare, which we had to move in advance. And anyone who's got young children will know you get childcare codes that go in terms.
A term will run
from April to September. So in childcare, it cost us just under around about £4,000.
Right.
And then there were £4,000 of legal fees, then other survey costs. And of course, when you plan to move, you make family arrangements. You might bring in a family member from a different part of the world or whatever, where they're coming from.
Yep.
So, you know, the total cost is around about £10,000 to us, just because somebody thought, you know what, I don't fancy that house after all.
And have you subsequently sold the property, or it's still on the market?
Nick, this is where the story gets absolutely incredible. We've managed to sell it again. So people who came the first time back in January, 3.5 months ago, before we went through this, have agreed to buy the house. Three days later, the original buyer got in touch with us and said, you know what, we've changed our minds again. Can we come back and buy your house?
I can imagine.
Can you imagine what the reply was?
This is a live show, Rick. I can imagine what your response was. But you're in a good place now, are you? Have you passed exchange with these new purchasers yet?
No. This has all happened so recently. This is incredibly fresh.
Wow.
This all happened in the last couple of weeks. So we're right back to the beginning of the process with these new buyers. So we start again and we build towards exchange. And we can all learn lessons no matter what we are in life. And
yep.
I've definitely myself, even in my profession, one thing I learned out of this is, you know what? If you are setting until these law changes come in, which I hope they do very, very soon, but until they come in, agree at the beginning for an exchange date with the person who's buying your house and say, if we go past that date,
yep.
we're going back to market or we're moving on. Because endless inquiries don't do anyone any good.
No.
They cost the economy lots. They cost you financially as an individual lots. And I tell you what, not financially, just on a personal level, what it does to you and your family and how much of a mess you've got to go through to sort out is probably worse than all of it.
Good luck, Rick. I hope it sticks this time. Rick Kelsey, thank you. You're a personal finance journalist. You host the podcast The Running Channel. Calls coming in on this. Ange, 8:43 the time. Ange in Dartford. This resonates with you, does it, Ange? Good morning.
Absolutely. Good morning, Nick.
Love the show.
I live on my own. I've got a leasehold masonette in Dartford. The lease is sort of getting less and less. So about July, August last year, decided let's try and get myself a little freehold property locally, get a little garden.
Yeah, lovely.
Everything was going through perfectly lovely. Then it got to, I found some buyers, I found somewhere to buy myself. Then it got to March, we was actually talking dates. I'd sold furniture. I'm sitting here, so I'm still surrounded by boxes that I just haven't got the heart to unpack.
Right.
And then I got a phone call, and I thought from the estate agents, thinking, okay, let's talk about good dates to exchange, my buyers pulled out. They decided that Dartford was too much of a flood risk for them. Then when you think about it, anywhere east of Woolwich is a flood risk. And and it was just so ridiculous. I asked my solicitors, actually asked for a copy of their flood report, and they weren't forthcoming. They'd, like the previous caller, they'd obviously changed their mind.
What are you going to do?
I'm staying here. I'm trying to fall back in love with it. I'm investigating extending the lease.
Okay, all right.
I've got a ginormous solicitor's bill because that's still got to be paid.
How much it is? You don't have to tell me, but how much is
it? No, $5,000.
Oh, my God.
I know, and it's going to wipe out my savings. It's only money, Nick, at the end of the day, sort of like, you know, we've all sort of like had our trials and tribulations, and I've got fantastic people around me who sort of like, you know, buoy me up.
Well, come on, you've got Dartford Market, you've got the theatre there, which I can't remember the name of the theatre.
The Orchard, it's in a tent.
You used to have a Waitrose there, but unfortunately they came out. But you've got a lot going on in Dartford. Come on, you've got those lovely villages just outside.
We have. Do you know what? And it is. And I'm sitting here, and I'm right in the middle of Dartford, but I've got the best neighbours, and it's so quiet, and I love it to bits. So,
all right. And you look after yourself. I'm sorry, a lot of calls coming, and you fall in love with the house. I sense that might be the way to go. More calls coming in on this. Plus, after the news,
he's from Burnley, not from Barclays. The only Lloyds he knows are Horsey, and next to TSB, he's really quite the flop.
The Bank of Dave, the extraordinary Dave Fishwick, who bailed out a local community, has turned into a musical. And we'll hear from Dave, as Bank of Dave, after this. Just turned 8:46, LBC News headlines, Dominic Ellis.
The head of the UK Health Security Agency has insisted to Nick that the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former officers are being investigated for potential misconduct over how the force looked into sexual abuse claims made against Mohammed Al-Fayed. And millions of voters are expected to head to the polls in elections across England, Scotland and Wales. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb in Hersham. There are lengthy delays on the Esher Road in both directions, and that's following an accident at Riverside Road. Also, severe delays in Clapton because of the roadworks on the Lee Bridge Road. There are restrictions at Chatsworth Road, but there are huge delays in the area. In Bermondsey, one lane stays closed on the A2, the Old Kent Road eastbound at Albany Road, and that's following an accident that happened earlier. On the motorways, it's very busy on the M25, anti-clockwise to the Dartford Tunnel, and also anti counterclockwise. It's slow at junction 12 at the M3. On the underground, the Piccadilly line can't run between the Heathrow terminals because of an ongoing investigation, and Greater Anglia services are disrupted via Shelford.
LBC.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
You can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060973. LBC.
There's one green bottle sat on my fridge shelf. This green and white bottle that supports my gut health. Beautiful by nature, biotiful by name. It's the tastiest way to up my gut health game.
Biotiful Gut Health. Switch your yogurt to the UK's number one kefir and give your gut and your summer a lift. Kefir is a source of calcium which contributes to the normal function of digestive enzymes. For verification of UK's number one kefir, see biotifulguthealth.com/radio.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
A box of Abel and Cole fresh organic fruit and veg delivered weekly to your door. Requires washing, peeling and or chopping. Vegetables may come with mud and soil on, and very occasionally a ladybird. All produce is grown ethically and with absolutely no artificial pesticides. Delivered without pointless plastic. Increased natural flavours in meals can lead to busier kitchen tables during peak hours, may lead to unexpected enthusiasm for cooking and distaste for processed food alternatives. Abel and Cole. Unprocess your food. Second helping subject to availability.
Now, listen carefully. I want you to think of selling your car. Who's going to buy that car? Keep thinking. Struggling to know where to look? On Motorway, there are 7,500 verified dealers who are ready and waiting to bid on your car. It's not magic, it's Motorway. Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk.
Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
10 minutes before nine, and as I've said, because we can't have too much political content, it allows us to look at stories that might not quite have made our agenda or our news list prior to that. And one of which is a musical, Bank of Dave, about Dave Fishwick, a great chap who I've met at TV studios now for years. Burnley, born and bred, a self-made millionaire. He spent years helping local people, bailing out small businesses when banks turned them away. It's going to be a musical. Have we got a little bit of that musical? No, we haven't got that. Let's play that at the end. Let's get Dave Fishwick into the conversation. Those who don't know your stories, Dave, remind them when it started and how it started. Morning to you.
Good morning, Nick. How lovely to see you again. It all started, went right the way back to when I left school absolutely useless at 16 years old and no qualifications whatsoever, straight onto a building site as a builder's labourer. And we went from builder's labourer to building the first new high street bank for 150 years. And then Hollywood turned up, not just once, but twice, with the number one Netflix movies. And we thought that were bonkers. But then the musical arrived in the Lowry. I mean, that's absolutely out there, and it's just marvellous, Nick.
What's the story that it tells, Dave?
It tells the story of when I was very, very young. I mean, I can remember a time where I didn't actually know anybody had an inside toilet. So we were very poor. We lived in a house on John Street with my older brother, Andrew. And everybody just had an outside loo, you know. We went to the local tip on a daily basis. We got a few pram wheels, a bit of wood, and some rope to steer it with. And my brother were a brilliant with a nail and an half a Charlie, which is what we call a brick up in North, and we used to bang these bits of wood.
Thank God it was a brick. It's also known as something else, but keep going, Dave.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's definitely the brick.
Right.
And he'd knock the go-kart together, and we'd bomb down the back street. We didn't have a lot, but we had a lot of love, and that's what it goes back to. You know, my dad had two jobs. He got up at 4 a.m. and he was a farm labourer in the morning, and then at lunchtime he'd walk down to the mill and do the 2 till 10 shift fixing the looms, and that was 7 days a week. My mum were a weaver. And it starts there and goes through the story of how bonkers my life become.
Now, at the heart of it, you're a salesman, aren't you?
Well, I do sell buses, so I've got a bus company, and we sell buses. Yeah, and I have to go back and sell a few at some point. They've probably forgot who I am.
And how did you sell the bank? Why was that such a hit so quickly?
Well, I mean, to be honest, it's Davy Goliath, because everybody said, I mean, look at Fred the Shrednik. I mean, he got given a knighthood for losing billions of pounds of the country's money. And me, I wanted to help people get the best rate of interest on the high street. I wanted to lend to people and businesses who couldn't borrow from the high street bank through no fault of their own. And after the overheads were paid, we feed 750 children every morning. Wow. So obviously I'm a terrible person and they wanted to put me in prison.
What happens when you walk down, if it has one, Burnley High Street? Do people come over and shake your hand and hug you and everything else? Are you like a rock star, Dave?
I don't know about a rock star, but I'm certainly very well known. And yesterday I was there at the Bank of Dave, and my mate David H, my right-hand man, and we were in the cafe, and it's definitely different. Life is definitely different, but it's wonderful when people come up singing songs from the musical. We've got one called Burnley Born and Bred, you know, and it's just fabulous.
Right, so it's up in the Lowry currently. Is it going on tour, lastly, Dave?
Yeah, well, we've got it at the Lowry at the moment. The director is Nikolai Foster, who did Billy Elliot and Kinky Boots.
Oh, right.
We've then got Rob Badge and Pippa Cleary with the book and the music. Matt Williams, he's the producer, the guy that does all the big movies. And it's currently at the Lowry, and then it goes to the Leicester Curve on the 20th of May. So that's going to be really exciting. And then we'll see you guys in London at Leicester Square later in the year. So in the West End, here we come.
You make sure that I'm in the front row, Dave. Good luck to you. Great speaking with you again. Dave Fishwick, thank you. Founder of the Bank of Dave. And let's close the conversation with a bit from the musical.
He's from Burnley, not from Barclays. The only voice he knows a horsey, and next to TSP he's really quite the flop. He's sure of the opinion that is your dominion, but facts are facts, and we can do it too.
Good luck to Bank of Dave, 8:55. We'll come back. A lot of you want to talk about that interview I had with the journalist whose property purchase fell through. In fact, we're just reworking the agenda so that we can feature that in the next hour. So if you're waiting to hang on, we will get your calls through. But there is a story we've been telling a little bit on the LBC News Bulletin that we need to expand. This is concerning a former Sainsbury's employee telling LBC his soul is crushed after he was dismissed following an altercation with a notorious champagne thief in his store. This, of course, comes on the hot heels of Waitrose taking similar action and Morrison's as well. LBC's reporter Helen Hodnett has the story and is in the studio. Helen, good morning.
Morning, Nick. So Gary MacArthur worked at a Sainsbury's store in West Wickham in South London for 15 years. He told us exclusively how important his role was to him.
The job meant everything for me. It was my heart and soul, really. The community was just my heart. I am more in touch with the older community that came into the store. I'd greet them, I'd hug them, I'd chat with them. We'd laugh, we'd cry sometimes. So there's a real sense of love and loyalty for me and the colleagues and customers.
One night in December last year, the shop didn't have a security guard on duty because the guard on shift had suffered a suspected stroke earlier in the day. Gary had actually helped to give him CPR on the shop floor. The guard was taken to hospital, but keenly aware of the surge in shoplifting, which Gary described to us as pure looting, he agreed to stay later that day to help out the all-female staff, help them feel safer when a notorious champagne thief came into the shop and grabbed a bottle. Gary escorted him out, and we're told he took the bottle off the thief, but the thief went back into the shop, started smashing bottles, throwing two in the direction of his manager and another colleague.
From there, he's dropped the bottles, ran down all three. I've grabbed his arm. Another customer's grabbed him by his throat and his other arm. Again, with this, I understand. Obviously, the thief's got a bit more aggressive and tried lunging forward. I've grabbed his legs, put him down to the floor with another two other customers at the time holding him down, waiting for the police to come. Police come, give him statements. And that was pretty much the end of that story.
But 3 months later, and after a previous written warning for another incident, Gary was dismissed for gross misconduct. And at the start of April, he lost his appeal to be reinstated to his role. In his dismissal letter, which has been seen by LBC, he was told that despite the shoplifter hurling bottles at his colleagues, Gary could have been a visual deterrent.
My soul is crushed in the sense of it's destroyed for the old humanity side of doing the right thing, being the right person. I mean, I've not got a bad bone in my body. I'm not a spiteful or hurtful person. I feel that I do the right thing when the right time is needed. I mean, I don't have much. I mean, the friends that I do have are generally my work colleagues. Apart from that, I mean, what you see here is my life. I've got 5 fish tanks and 2 snakes, and that's pretty much me. The 4 days I'm at work are the best times of my life.
So, approached about Gary's case, a Sainsbury's spokesperson said they are seeing incidents of violence, aggression and theft happening in their stores on a daily basis, threatening the safety of colleagues and customers, saying that's why their guidance to colleagues on responding to retail crime prioritises keeping everyone in the stores safe and is specifically designed to prevent incidents from escalating. Gary, in the meantime, has found a new job, not at Sainsbury's, which he says he'll start soon, but he says he's lost out financially, and the emotional toll this has all taken on him is plain to hear.
LBC's Helen Hodder not reporting. And the music means we move on. Coming up after the news, we come back to that conversation. Time to change the exchange in house purchases and sales. You heard the story from that journalist, and so many of your stories have poured in. We will return to that. In other news, happy birthday, Harry Potter. 25 years old later this year, now a $7.7 billion franchise. Having never seen one of the movies, I'll be asking you to explain what is the magic of Harry Potter. And
Deutschland, Deutschland,
German holidaymaker so frustrated he has successfully sued a tour operator because of the 6 a.m. dash for sun lounges, which he kept missing out on. Details later in the hour. 9 o'clock news is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, the head of the UK Health Security Agency has insisted to LBC that the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. 2 British people on board the cruise ship at the centre of an outbreak have returned to the UK and are now self-isolating. Another British man has been airlifted from the vessel and is receiving specialist treatment in the Netherlands. Chief Scientific Officer Professor Robin May has told Nick the outbreak isn't like coronavirus.
So I really want to stress that. This is not a disease that, you know, if you walk past someone, even if they had it, you're going to pick up. It requires close contact, as far as we know. And actually, the emerging evidence is this is primarily transmitted from people who already have symptoms, not from people who are asymptomatic. So the risk is much, much lower here. In terms of the individuals concerned, there are also, you know, very small numbers of people that we will be focusing on.
President Trump says it's very possible that a deal to end the war with Iran can be reached. Iran says it's reviewing a new proposal, but their top official says Washington wants Tehran to surrender. President Trump insists that Iran is keen to negotiate, but has threatened a higher level of bombing if no agreement is reached. Speaking last night, the US president also confirmed that an American naval blockade of Iranian ports remains in full force.
The Iranians are not getting anything through one way or the other, so they're out of business. And we'll see whether or not they are agreeing. And if they don't agree, they'll end up agreeing shortly thereafter.
A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former Met officers are being investigated for potential misconduct. The police watchdog is looking into how the force handled sexual abuse claims made against Mohammed Al-Fayed. The former Harrods owner died in 2023, having never faced any charges. More than 400 allegations have been made against Al-Fayed, dating back to 1977. People heading to the polls in England, Scotland and Wales this morning. Elections for the Welsh and Scottish parliaments are taking place. Local council and mayoral votes are being held in England. Polls close at 10 o'clock tonight. And the oil company Shell has reported underlying earnings of just over £5 billion for the first 3 months of this year. That's more than double the previous quarter. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 47 at 10,391. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, cloudy for most with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
You know what you're getting with a wedding? Wedding hats. A baby in a waistcoat crying throughout the vows. Themed tables. Awkward best man speech. The plus one.
Hello.
People dancing in a circle. Ruined rental suit. Sometimes in life you just know what you're getting. Like a luxury bed and a great night's sleep. You know what you're getting with Premier Inn.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 3 minutes after nine, Thursday, May the 7th. Time to change the exchange mechanism as it regards house purchases and sales. Had an interview with a journalist, about 20 minutes so ago. The calls are still coming in. We've reworked the news list and we're going to that in just a few moments' time. In other news, we'll also be giving you the story of the German who's won a financial payout after losing a race for a sun lounger. Got quite a chunk back of his holiday. Have you been on the receiving end? Is it always a battle between the Britons and the Germans as to who get their towels out first? And do you do what I'm told is the thing, which is you put your towels down and then you go and have your buffet breakfast? Is that the reality? And as it celebrates 25 years, a franchise that sold more than 600 million books, taken $7.7 billion worldwide... Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone started 25... I'm so sorry, the Philosopher's Stone 25 years ago, as I say. The book some years prior to that. But I'll ask you to define marvellous music there by John Williams, of course. The magic of Harry Potter.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Probably for the last time that I'll tell you, but don't be surprised if my colleagues quite rightly tell you that the shows, all our shows have to be slightly different in text today because we are prohibited by fairly arcane ancient restrictions, but they must be observed, that we can't talk too much about politics, which, in a strange way, has helped us alight on a different story about house purchases and house sales. Now, the key is what's called exchange. Once you get to the exchange point, typically you're going to complete a couple of weeks thereafter. But in England... up until the point of exchange, your potential purchaser can back out with no financial penalty. You'll hear a story just briefly in a moment. Now, if you get to exchange and your purchaser pulls out, typically they're going to surrender the 10% deposit they've put up. These are all typicals. And we alighted on this after a conversation with Rick Kelsey. Now, Rick's a personal finance journalist. He had his property sale collapse 12 minutes prior to deadline. He's lost somewhere in the order of £10,000. His house is back on the market. He told us a little of how the story played out.
Exchange is the big one if you're buying a house, because that's when you exchange a contract, and that means it becomes legally binding. The completion can take place weeks, even a month later. That's the day you actually move into a house and the rest of the money gets exchanged. On the exchange of contracts, it's normally 10% of whatever the cost of your house that gets passed over to the other person's solicitors. But what we have in England and Wales is a system where until that exchange takes place, and this gap where the exchange takes place can be up to 3 or 4 months now. It's been getting longer and longer since COVID. anybody can pull out. And they can pull out for whatever reason they choose. Maybe they changed their mind. Maybe they found something wrong with the house. But maybe they just don't feel like it anymore. And that can cost people thousands.
What happened in your instance?
So a couple of weeks ago, it was our planned exchange day. We had agreed a date and that by 4 o'clock on that day, we would exchange. And the night before, the person who was buying our house had texted me, we're happy to sign, we'll sign tomorrow. And it had been an arduous process, Nick, arduous, around about 130.
Why arduous? Was yours a particularly difficult one to sell? Was it in need of some love? What was the issue?
Well, because the buyers themselves were picky. A solicitor will tell you if you have more than 50 inquiries when you're buying a house or you're selling a house, more than 50 would be a lot.
Yeah.
Less than 50 would be pretty normal. We were up to 134 inquiries.
Oh, Lord.
And we'd had to do extra surveys. We'd had to come back from work on multiple days, and we thought they were picky. But we know it's a difficult time to sell a house at the moment, Nick, so we had to go with it.
So it wasn't just, have you got your boiler covered and have you got your damp proofing or something?
It was unbelievable things like, give me the square footage of your solar panels and can you confirm that they can fit the roof? Well, of course they can fit the roof. They're on the roof. And this went on for a while. So what you've got to do in this instance is you've got to set a deadline, and that's the only way the solicitors are going to get it over the line. So we set a deadline, and they said they were going to sign. And I, at the time, was that night we were on tour with our show in the West End, and we were about to go on stage, and I was getting nervous. It was getting towards 4 o'clock. Mm-hmm. Nothing had happened, and all of a sudden, I got a text message from the buyer, and she said, it's with great sadness that we'll have to pull out of buying your house due to unforeseen circumstances. They basically changed their mind.
Oh, goodness me. What did that mean? Obviously then, and you were meant to be doing a gig, which is a nightmare, you presumably put in a quick phone call to your solicitor?
Well, I mean, at this point, this is where anyone who's been through this experience, which sadly is hundreds of thousands of people every year due to the archaic system that operates in England, which is so different, it seems, to most places in the world, including Scotland, you put in a series of phone calls. Now, as a financial journalist, I know the pitfalls here. I know you're not supposed to spend money booking movers, making plans on your new house, booking architects for your new house. I know all that. I know you don't spend money. But if you've got young children, like I have, I've got a 3- and a 6-year-old, you have to organise nurseries. You have to organise schools. And when you book yourself into a nursery, how the nursery schemes work, sometimes you'll have to pay in advance. You have to give your nursery codes. This can cost thousands of pounds. We'd already moved our child, our toddler, up to a nursery in the north of England. And we'd moved her school as well. So you have to get the schools back. You have to get the nurseries back. And this is all because someone basically changes their mind and think, you know what, actually, I don't want that house anymore.
Personal finance journalist Rick Kelsey, the house is back on the market. He's pretty confident he's got a buyer. Unbelievably, as he told us in the previous hour, the buyer dropped out, has come back. And I think Mr. Kelsey gave him short shrift on that. Caroline, coming to your calls and many others. Just interesting how it works elsewhere. Paul in Islington says, in France, exchange happens very fast, 10% payable, both sides, so no incentive to pull out. But also, crucially, one solicitor, a notaire, does both sides, so a lot more efficient. And now to Spain, Brian from Benidorm. In Spain, once you pay your 10% deposit, if the buyer pulls out, you lose it. If the seller pulls out, they have to pay you 20%. Easy enough, simple, and protects both parties from last-minute pull-outs. Caroline's in Bognor Regis. What happened to you, Caroline? Good morning.
Good morning. We've been trying to move for over 2 years. We lost our first buyer because we couldn't move quickly enough for them. They were in rented, and the house that we wanted was sold. Then that house came back on the market. We found another buyer, and 3 months into the process, they then declared that they were having to extend the lease on their flat.
By how long? I just went, how many months or years?
They had to extend it
by.
Okay. But I already knew that extending leases was a long process. And 8 months into our attempted sale, and they pulled out at 4:30 on a Friday afternoon. We had an email from the solicitor.
Hang on, just say me the relevance. Was it due to complete at 5 then on the afternoon? You said 4:30 on a Friday. Why did you give me that time?
I gave you that time because that's when the email came through from our solicitor to say that we'd lost our buyers.
On a Friday 4:30?
On a Friday.
With half an hour of office hours left, effectively.
Yep. And that was it. They pulled out. We lost that house. We finally found another place, and we've had to take out a mortgage. We've had we're hoping to have agreed dates today to exchange. But it's taken us over 2 years, and we've lost four buyers in the process. One was made redundant. And if the solicitors had pulled their fingers out, that those people would be in our house and we would have moved 5 months ago.
How much have you burnt on solicitors' fees?
I'm dreading to think. I think it's going to be around 5,000. And in addition to that, of course, I'm self-employed. I've had to put off work and sorting out lots of things because of working around clients and not being available. My husband's become incredibly ill because of the stress of the whole process.
Oh, I'm so sorry. That's terrible.
If I was in Scotland, we wouldn't have had this grief.
Well, this is what's so frustrating. I mean, let me just read you this. Tim, we had a second home in Spain. Last year, we put it up for sale, immediately had a number of viewings and an offer. An offer was accepted, and in exactly 27 days, we received our money. They got the keys. It's a good process, and it prevents last-minute disappointments such as gazumping. I don't understand if they can do it in Scotland and in Spain. Why we seem unable to do it in England?
I don't know, because on top of that, we've had to drop the price of our house by £20,000. We don't earn a lot of money.
Are you happy with the one you're going to? Have you done a good deal at the other end, as it were, Caroline?
It's going to cost us a lot more because we've had to take out a mortgage and we're in our 60s, but we have a daughter we have to look after. We're hoping that it will meet all of those needs. But the whole process has just been horrendous. And you're on tenterhooks the whole time.
Of course you are. You're emotional. So you hope to get the dates later today, did you say, Caroline?
Yes.
All right, well, we'll all be thinking of you. Good luck. I'm sorry you've been through so much. There is a conversation to be had here with a relevant person in the field of politics when we can, which we won't go any further. Louise is in Chepstow. You're on the radio. Louise, good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes. Nice to speak to you. Big fan.
Oh, bless you. Thank you so much. What are you going to tell me? Has this happened to you?
No. I actually work for an estate agent as a sales progressor, and it's the sales progressor's job to make sure that the progress of the sale goes through smoothly.
So you don't actually flog the house. You make sure the deal gets done.
Yes, and by doing that, you open dialogue with the buyer, or whoever you're acting for, the buyer or the seller, and make sure everybody's in touch with everybody, and they're checked, usually weekly. We try not to annoy solicitors, because I have been a chartered legal exec as a conveyancer, and there's nothing more annoying than an agent that keeps ringing you saying, how's progress? Because while you're talking to the agent, you're not doing the job. So, basically, it's keep an open dialogue.
You must have the patience of a saint.
Drink lots of coffee. Thank you.
I need to ask your husband or partner or whatever whether you've got the patience of a saint. What is the most common cause for breakdown of a deal?
Lack of communication, and it causes frustration for clients. So you say, well, I haven't heard from my solicitor for 2 or 3 weeks, even if the solicitor is able to just send a message by email to say, this is where we are, we haven't moved forward because A, and then... Yeah. They can move on and try and progress it further. But the agent is all over it, hopefully, and they can see problems, not before they come up, but at least they can have a reason and you can explain that to the client.
So having been in this business and having legal training, can you get a whiff of when you have a concern over a deal? Mr. Kelsey, with whom we spoke in the first hour, said when it got to about 135 minor issues that the potential buyer kept highlighting, he had his concerns. A couple of dozen, obviously. Does your boiler have a guarantee or whatever? But is there a sort of number that you think, hello, we've got a problem here?
No, I don't think there is, because it's subjective, Nick. Every property is different, unless, of course, it's on the development and they're kind of a template. Particularly older properties, you need to ask more questions. And I know it's frustrating, but to actually buy something and take out a mortgage is probably the biggest risk you'll make financially in your whole life.
Aside from marriage.
And you have to raise questions. But again...
Sorry, do go on.
You have to be reasonable, don't you?
You do. Louise, thanks for your kind words about the show. Good luck with the work you do, keeping people abreast of all of that. Coming up after the news...
Blimey, Harry, didn't you ever wonder where your mum and dad learned it all?
Learned what?
You're a wizard, Harry.
I'm a what?
A wizard.
Oh, there we figure, Robbie Coltrane as Hagrid, is it? And Daniel Radcliffe as Harry. A series of movies I've never seen one. But they're 25 years old today, this year, and I want you to tell me the magic of Harry Potter. 9:16 LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
The head of the UK Health Security Agency has insisted to Nick that the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former officers are being investigated for potential misconduct over how the force looked into sexual abuse claims made against Mohammed Al-Fayed. And millions of voters are expected to head to the polls in elections across England, Scotland and Wales. LBC weather, cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. In Barnes, the delays continue because the Upper Richmond Road, which is part of the South Circular Road, is closed both ways after an accident. In Hersham, the Esher Road is closed eastbound, and that's also after an accident, and that's also causing delays. Very busy on the M4 westbound from the M25 to Junction 5 at Langley because of an investigation. And one lane's just been closed on the M23 southbound, just after the M25 junction, because a car's broken down, so one lane is closed for recovery. On the Underground, there's no service on the Bakerloo line between Elephant and Castle and Lambeth North, and then there are severe delays on the rest of the line. And also on the Underground, there are minor delays on the Jubilee line after a train broke down earlier.
LBC.
At Tesco, we know that right now, every little helps. That's why we've made Aldi Price Match available in over 2,000 Tesco Express stores. Price matching on essentials, so you can bag the basics with confidence. When every penny counts, just look out for the Aldi Price Match logo. Next time you nip into your local Express. Tesco, every little helps. Prices checked and matched in Aldi stores and online twice weekly. Pro rata excludes promotions. Selected products excludes Northern Ireland and Woosh. See tesco.com/Aldi Price Match.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
For whoever they want to be in life, give them a great start with WellKid. Carefully balanced, great-tasting vitamins and minerals for 4 to 12-year-olds with specific nutrients such as zinc and vitamin D, which support normal immune system function. The WellKid range from Vitabiotics, from Boots, pharmacies and Vitabiotics.com.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics with over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Donations to British Heart Foundation fund scientific research that can help save lives. People like Joe, who's pitching his next big business plan. Maria, who's sending out her wedding invitations. And Jack, who's just being a teenager again. Because when you donate, you fund more than just science. You help save lives. British Heart Foundation funds research that aims to cure inherited heart muscle diseases. But our work is not done. Donate now at bhf.org.uk and keep us beating.
The people of Britain have bought loads of noise-cancelling headphones. With a Barclaycard Rewards credit card, you could get cash back on eligible purchases and no fees on spending overseas. What you buy is your business. Rewarding you is ours. Subject to financial status, T's and C's apply. Check if you're eligible at barclaycard.co.uk. Representative example, 28.9% APR representative variable and 28.9% purchase rate per annum based on a £1,200 credit limit.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Come back to so many calls on how to change the exchange part of buying and selling houses. But let's celebrate 25 years of...
You're a wizard, Harry.
I'm a what?
A wizard. And a thumping good one, I'd wager, once you trade up a little.
I'm Ron, by the way. Ron Weasley.
I'm Harry. Harry Potter.
So is it true? Do you really have the
what?
The scar.
Oh, wicked.
Wingardium Leviosa. You're saying it wrong. It's Leviosa, not Leviosa.
Now you listen to me, all three of you. You're meddling in things that ought not to be meddled in. It's dangerous. What that dog is guarding is strictly between Professor Dumbledore and Nicholas Flamel.
Nicholas Flamel?
I shouldn't have said that. I should not have said that.
Gryffindor wins the House Cup. Yeah!
Well, as if you needed reminding, Daniel Radcliffe as Harry, Robbie Coltrane as Hagrid, Rupert Grint as Ron Weasley, Emma Watson as Hermione Granger, the late Richard Harris as Albus Dumbledore, Michael Gambon, of course, in later movies, and the music Hedwig's Theme by John Williams. Was I reading that out? Yes, I was, because I have the confession I have never seen a Harry Potter movie and I have never read a Harry Potter book. But I've clearly missed out. $7.7 billion franchise for the movies. More than 600 million copies of the books, and I've not even talked about the TV series and the stage show. So what is the magic? Stephen Armstrong, arts journalist at The Observer, joins me now. Gosh, this is a job for you. You're the man for it. How would you define the magical allure of Harry? Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Nick. I mean, this is a sort of everything that's ever been told in children's stories meshed into one collection of books. So if you, I mean, I'm sure you didn't read things like Storky and Co. You're a young man. Billy Bunter, that sort of thing. It wouldn't have been you.
Jennings. I read Jennings.
There we are. Jennings
and just William. And William. I read Rachel Crompton.
Exactly.
Yep.
So particularly, it's got the school. It's got the boarding school story of the Jennings.
Yep.
Which is, you know, British classic.
Yep.
It's got a lot of allusions to Arthurian legends, sort of sorting hats, magical swords. There's got a lot of Narnia in that they go to the magical school and they come back out into the normal world. So they're really piling in all of the... J.K. Rowling is piling in all of the references to so many popular forms of children's fiction. And that's why I think it works so well, because you even if you've... You know, you will recognise something of that in there.
I would imagine for a lot of people, depending on your age, it might have been the first book you ever read, or it might be for some people the first book their children or child ever read.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly at a particular age. It's, I mean, my eldest daughter is now 25.
Right.
She devoured the series when she got to about 7 or 8. I think that's probably the entry level for reading. Tess came a little later on.
Right.
But, it's... I mean, first three books, she's not got an editor. No, she's got an editor, because obviously she's not successful. It's still been relying on librarians to persuade people to read. Then she hits the fourth book, and suddenly everyone's going, you're a hit, you don't need editing, and they get much, much, much thicker.
Really?
So it's a lot more work to read those things. Like, bedtime stories, that's like a year's solid bedtime stories.
Lastly, the first book you referenced there, Stephen, 1990, actually, 26th of June, not that far off, 1997, Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone. We learned this morning that the second season, the first season due to come out this Christmas on the streaming platform HBO Max, the second season already renewed. This magic endures 30-plus years. Why?
Well, it can't be because J.K. Rowling's short of cash, but it is a story that has been told in each generation. I suppose, in a way, this new group of kids have yet to see a group of kids that they identify with. I mean, if you like, the people who own that Harry Potter are now in their 20s. So how do you reboot, I suppose, is the Hollywood word. How do you reboot it for a new generation of kids and make it theirs?
So when your daughters go on to have their children, there's every likelihood that the smaller books, they will sit and read them, not the big ones where there was no editor, but they will sit and read the smaller books to their children, and it will go full circle, Stephen.
Unless they reboot it again with a whole new set of something or others, because they're very, very, very canny, the team around this publishing empire.
Really enjoyed our conversation. Best wishes to your daughter. Thanks ever so much, Stephen. Stephen Armstrong, arts journalist with The Observer. This is what you're saying. Come back to property sales, but here we go. Paul in Linslade. I had some lovely dozes when I had to take my daughters to see the Potter films, only to be woken quickly when there was a sudden noise. That's lovely. Andy in Sidcup. Isn't the magic of Harry Potter obvious, Nick? He's a wizard. It is, sir. Well done. And I'm sure I know I've missed out. There was a TV or radio series once called I Never Saw Star Wars, and it was things that everyone feels they've done or should have done. I mean, I've got to admit, I've never read War and Peace, but I don't think I'm alone there. Come on, let's be honest about it. But it was quite a funny, I've never seen Star Wars. And people would say, I've never actually seen a Harry. I've walked through the room at Christmas, and children are watching a Harry Potter, although my kids never really got into it. But there we are. Let's go to the serious matter of properties. And the heartache, the emotional distress when you don't get to exchange. I think we've explained, hopefully, enough of the process now. Ruth in York. Ruth, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Hiya, morning, Nick.
Hello.
Hello, hiya. It's a second-hand story from me, but right. My lovely mum is a private landlord.
Yep.
And she has been waiting now for two of her rental properties to sell for nearly over 6 months.
Oh, Lord. How big is her portfolio? How many does she have?
So she's only got six.
Right.
Okay. So it's not a mega income
right.
to her, obviously, with
mega
the ongoing
work,
running.
I would think. Oh,
yeah, with the ongoing costs and kind of upkeep, and obviously with all the new kind of regulations that are coming in.
We better not do too much on that side if we
No.
So what needs to be done? What should be changed to make the life of your mother and so many others easier?
Exchange should happen far, far quicker. You know, she's 6 months in now to two properties, having to take on all the council tax, all the running costs, all the standing charges, and it's putting her out of pocket and her overall income pot out of pocket, because the solicitors, the estate agents just aren't on the ball enough.
I don't want to distress you, but it's probably not great for her emotional health either, in all honesty, Ruth.
Or mine.
Oh, your.
Because, you know, she is absolutely at her wit's end, and we are due to exchange on both next week. I mean, fingers crossed that happens, but if it doesn't, you know, we're all in for it.
Oh, dear, I do hope, as I said to an earlier caller, Ruth, I hope this is the breakthrough you need. Thank you for that, Ruth. Best wishes to your mother. Adam says, this has just happened to my family and I. We had been going through inquiries for 7 months. Then just before we were setting exchange, our buyers pulled out. The chain collapsed. It's a horrible and expensive experience. Matt, in Epping, I moved last year. I took advice from various friends who'd been knocked right at the point of exchange. I said to my buyer, as soon as the solicitor has confirmed the title deeds are acceptable, as soon as he had the results of the building survey back, providing the survey was okay, he had to pay a non-returnable deposit of £10,000. He agreed to it. It sailed through. I know I was lucky, but I would advise anyone selling to try this. Now, that's a good idea. As long as you say, look, if the survey, we'd want to see the survey, but if the survey does find cracks or, what's it called, subsidence, whatever else there might be, or the house tilting, of course you get your £10,000 back. But otherwise, come on, put a bit of your money where your mouth is. Not a bad idea. John's in Lytham St. Anne's, nice part of the world. Hello, John, what do you do for a living?
Hello, I'm an estate agent, Nick. Been an estate agent for 45 years in this area.
Wow. What are you going to do when you're a grown-up?
I used to have a full head of hair, and I haven't now. Basically, due to solicitors, they do one thing. They send a letter to each other, which I know is instant, an email, but the reply could take 2 weeks.
Mm.
They don't pick a phone up to each other. We use a phone.
Yes,
we
great invention.
A vendor will phone me up and say, what the heck's going on? We phone the solicitor up. We don't write an email, we get onto it. Now, if solicitors were paid on success, on completion, as we are, then they'd be working quicker, they'd be working harder. The trouble is, Nick, it's taking over three months now, and it gives people time to change their minds in English law. They see something else comes on the market at another price, different area, they're moving, pulling out of one sale onto another one. It's a nightmare.
Let me ask you this. You talk about the solicitors. I'm sorry, it's been so long since I bought a house. Is it a set fee, or do they charge by the hour?
They charge by the hour.
So in some instances, it might be in their interest to try and eke it out.
Exactly. I'm glad you said that. I better not say that. That happens to quite a few things, surveyors and all sorts of stuff.
Come on, tell us the tricks of the trade. What is the biggest frustration to being an estate agent?
The problem, apart from being the music hall joke, we get hammered by everybody. But I can assure you, we're a family. My daughter does nothing else all day but try and keep sales going, ringing up buyers, ringing up solicitors. Solicitors don't want to speak to us, so it goes to a voicemail. They don't return the call. And by 4 o'clock, a vendor's saying, why didn't you, I phoned you at 10 o'clock, why don't you ring me back? Now, the other thing, Nick, which is equally hard for everybody, a lot of the solicitors in this last 5 years have been exchanging and completing on the same day.
Obviously that's legal, otherwise they wouldn't.
Oh, it's legal. So you go to bed at night, you've packed all your bags, you're not sure if it's on tomorrow or not.
Oh, my Lord. Oh, my God.
Okay. And I think some of your listeners will be... Wow. It may not happen in the south of England, but in the north of England, this happens a lot. It's absolutely a nightmare.
What's the best part of being an estate agent? I ask you the frustration. What's the best bit?
When we get letters and cards from vendors who thank us for all the work we do, and certainly thank my daughter and my staff, Yeah, there's a nice feeling with it. The majority of people are very nice to deal with. We get one or two. That's why you said before about putting a bond down. I think that's important.
Yeah.
After survey's been done, yep. Once everything's okay there, they both vendor, which is equally important. Can we have vendors pull out?
Nick? Right, I can imagine you do. John, thank you. We're over time. I've got to go. All those frustrations. Thanks again, John. Good luck with the business up there. God, you could do with a... Liebertzeit, a German, has sued a holiday firm after losing out on the 6 a.m. dash for sun loungers, and the firm has had to pay out quite a chunk of his holiday. I'll give you all the details and ask, have you had that 6 a.m. dash as well? It's 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, here on LBC. The news is with Dominic Ellis.
The head of the UK Health Security Agency has insisted to Nick that the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. Two British people on board the cruise ship at the centre of the outbreak have returned to the UK and are now self-isolating at home. A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former officers are being investigated for potential misconduct. The police watchdog's looking into how the force handled sexual abuse claims made against the late Harrods owner, Mohammed Al-Fayed. And voters are heading to the polls for elections in England, Scotland and Wales. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. LBC weather cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, a high of 15 degrees.
With rock-bottom approval ratings for the government, today voters head to the ballot box to mark Keir Starmer's report card. With his premiership under pressure, how big could the fallout be?
From 10 p.m, Lewis Goodall.
As the polls close, join me, Lewis Goodall, as we break down what's happening across the country and what it means for politics to come.
From 6 a.m, Nick Ferrari.
What will new governments mean for Scotland and Wales? I'll bring you all the fallout, the biggest names in politics, and importantly, hear your views too.
From 1 p.m, Sheila Fogarty.
Stay with LBC throughout the day as I bring you the declarations and drama set to shape the country for years to come.
Election Night Live, tonight from 10 p.m. Listen and watch on our free Global Player app or the LBC app. LBC.
Buying a home on a holiday park was the retreat you always wanted. But then came unexpected site fee increases. And that was before the dramatic loss in value. If you bought a home on a holiday park in the UK, you may have been missold. HolidayParkAdviceCentre.co.uk could help you receive thousands in compensation. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
What's the best present you ever got for your birthday? I bet it wasn't as life-changing as £1 million. Every week with the birthday draw, there's £1 million to be won. And you can enter from as little as £1 or via post. Enter by midnight on Sunday and your special day could win you £1 million. Visit thebirthdaydraw.com. Is it your lucky day? From Global and ITV. 18 plus, UK only, no purchase necessary.
Ratimi likes Pension B's modern approach to pensions.
I think Pension B has brought pensions into the 21st century, firstly through the use of technology. Signing up to the app is super simple. Pension B makes me feel very confident about my finances and makes me feel like I have a plan when it comes to my retirement.
At Pension B, we believe that when your pension is in a good place, you're in a good place. Download the app or go to pensionb.com and be pension confident. When investing, your capital is at risk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Back to change the exchange mechanism of property sales and purchase, but I've been asking what makes Harry Potter so wizard a show? Farah in Southfields is going to explain it to me. What have I missed out on, Farah? Hello.
Well, you're hugely missing out. So yep. I started reading the books when I saw people reading them on Tube in London, and I just wanted to know what was happening. Now, I'm 50,
right.
So I was a grown-up when I had a look at them, and since then, completely obsessed. I listen to Harry Potter audiobooks, where, like some people listen to classical music. Obviously not when I'm listening to you, Nick, and bless James, you. And bless Sheila, you. And everybody else.
Bless you.
So the story that I have for you is that... I got married in 2007. My husband was booking the return trip flight from Nairobi, and it happened to be on the same date as the last Harry Potter book coming out.
Oh, hang on.
And I actually said to him,
2007, Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, 21st yes. of July.
Yeah, there so that was the date that he was trying to book.
I just knew
that. And he just said, look, we have to go on this flight. I will get you the book it comes out, the day it comes out. I will get that for you.
Right.
And he kept his promise. We were in a Nairobi airport at like 3 a.m. Everything is shut, and he managed to get me the book. But the story I want to tell you, I have no idea. And you know what, Nick? There are some things you just don't ask your husband if you want to have a happy marriage.
Right.
You just don't. You accept the excellent outcomes.
Okay.
So anyway, he gets me this book and we're getting on the plane and we're walking through the cabin. And there are about 60, 65 teenage American students, school kids. And they are really noisy, as all kids are. Teachers are really struggling to get them to sit down and calm down because they're really excited. And as I walk through, it suddenly starts becoming really quiet and they're all looking at me. And then I realized it's because I had the book under my arm and they're like, she's got the Harry Potter book. She's got it. She's got it.
Deathly Hallows. Yeah.
And I'm telling you, it's the closest I've felt like Harry Potter walking through that forbidden forest and seeing that giant spiders, millions of spider kids looking at me. I literally slept with one eye open. That book came with me to the loo. I did not leave it there. And I just read the whole thing.
Help me with this. If, and I'm not going to pretend I will, but if I wanted an entry point into the Harry Potter series, which is the most readable of her books?
I would say either The Philosopher's Stone or The Prisoner of Azkaban. I think you would really enjoy The Prisoner of Azkaban, actually.
What it's is really so good about it?
I think it's because it's talking about children really starting looking at sort of slightly darker things. Philosopher's Stone's lovely because it's a fairy story, basically, but it's about friendships. And Harry Potter is just about family and friendships. And then the darker ones, actually, it's more political. So it starts going into fascism and, and supremacy. So as you grow up with the books, the children, it becomes far more complex.
Lastly,
they aren't just fairy stories.
Lastly, as a huge lover of the genre, do the films do the books justice?
I think everything's always better when you read it. The imagination in your head can't be challenged. But they are excellent films. They are excellent films. Some of them, I actually had to sit down with my my husband to watch the last few because I was like, oh, my goodness, it's getting very dark.
Mm.
But they are really good. They aren't just... they're not for little kids. Like, I wouldn't allow my children to watch the movies until they hit certain sort of age milestones because they wouldn't have understood them.
What would the age be?
So, The Philosopher's Stone, I would say if you're 7 or 8 years old, because you want to keep up with the story and the plot and see what's happening. And then when it gets to things like The Half-Blood Prince and The Deathly Hallows, I'd say you probably need to be 11 or 12.
They're quite dark, They're quite dark.
Well, because it's all political by the end of it. It's about the measures and the things that people will do to hold on to power and how much you can personally sacrifice for the best of others.
Well, your husband pulled it off at Nairobi Airport. Farah, thank you. I thoroughly enjoyed that story and you taking me through all the books. As I say again, more than 600 million copies, so there's certainly something to it. Farah, thank you. We'll come back to talk about properties in a moment, but I've been telling you the story about this German. One German holidaymaker so frustrated he successfully toured his tour operator because the sun lounges on his family holiday to the Greek island of Kos were systematically reserved as to be unable. Now, despite what might be seen as national stereotypings, Germans tend to find this behaviour as irritating as the rest of us. One recent poll showing that nearly 66% of German holidaymakers thought it was objectionable, and 14%, again, of German holidaymakers, had gone so far as to remove the offending towels, in some instances just putting them in the swimming pool. Now, the man who has not been publicly identified in Germany paid, and this is in euros, €7,186, so what's that's going to be, over £6,500, something like that, to take his wife and their two children on the package holiday to a large hotel in Kos back in August 2024. The hotel had a rule explicitly prohibiting guests from reserving sun lounges with towels, but they chose to ignore it. The family discovered that even if they got up at 6 in the morning, most of the sunbeds in prime spots had been taken. What's the point of... I mean, I had to... Virtually time I have to get up now. Hi, let's go on holiday, darling. Yeah, great. Let's get up at 6. What? Are you ready? I may as well be at work. I mean, at least the food will be a bit better, I suppose, if I'm on holiday. But, my goodness. Anyway, the man complained to a court in Hanover, saying he'd been obliged to spend 20 minutes a day patrolling the sun loungers, trying to find a spot where all four of them could relax. Often, the children had to lie on the floor alongside him and his wife. When asked, hotel staff, he claimed, declined to intervene on their behalf. Has this happened to you on these holidays? Anyway, here's what happened in the court in Hanover. The judges took his side and ruled he was entitled to a refund of... the Germans are so precise. €986.70. 98670. The tour operator, which has not been identified, had paid €350, but they found the holiday had been defective, and so they've levied the greater charge. Wow. Have you been on a holiday like that? And what do you do? Do you take it in turns with your wife or your partner? Well, I'll tell you what, I'll get up early on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You go down with the towels Tuesday, Thursday. Then at least some of us will get a bit of sleep. And if you take children, and there's a picture, I would imagine, is this the actual hotel? Oh, no, because they won't identify the hotel. Okay, so I don't know. But this hotel is classic. There's a swimming pool, and it looks very, 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 very pleasant, very worth a quick dip. And there's rows and rows of sun loungers. And, of course, you want the ones in the front, don't you? Mark's in Lee Green. Mark, do you get up at dawn to get the sunbeds? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. No, hello. What it is, the hotel we go to, they have a strict rule where you're not allowed about around the pool area until 10 a.m. There's a big pool for the adults, kids, and all that that open up at 9-ish, something like that. Yeah. But the one we want to go to, where there's no screaming kids, we have to queue at 10 a.m. So what we normally do is have a bit of scram breakfast, while she's sitting there finishing her nosh off, I say, right, I'm going to buzz down the pool with the towels. And then, like, obviously you're queuing there with others at 10 o'clock, and then the cleaners around the pool doing their bits, and they're watching us queue up, and they know you want to get to the pool, but they're just taking their time. So we just wait till their backs are turned, and we buzz over the little fence bit straight to the best bet.
Mark, how relaxing is this sport? It sounds like a military operation after your scrambled eggs and sausages.
It's all part of the game, Nick. It's all part of the game.
I don't want a game. I just want to go and relax.
You're going to be sitting by that pool all day long and just having a bit of squirt and just enjoying the sunshine.
A bit of squirt. And how many of you, at its highest number, how many would you be queuing, ready to skip over the fence when the cleaners go?
It's only me and the old lady. There'd be about a dozen people, I suppose, but it's only us that's got the...
And then how many sun loungers are up for grabs around the... Where do you want to go? Right by the pool? The first line by the pool? Is that?
No, not right now, because otherwise people splash as they're diving in. But as long as it's in line with the sun, Nick, that's the main thing. And as you follow the sun round, you sort of, the first couple of days, you see where the sun's coming in, and you see where you're following it round until you know it's there all day. Because sometimes you'll get stuck under a big palm tree, and that's defeating the object.
When are you going away this year?
December.
Lovely. Lock away off, though. Good luck. Good luck with the sunbeds. This is what you're saying. Gary, I was on a cruise last year, and by 6 a.m, all the sunbeds at the back of the boat were gone. Well, if we're talking cruises, you're doing considerably better than those poor souls out on that one by Cape Verde, aren't you? Diana in Paphos, we're in a lovely hotel in Cyprus at the moment that allocates your sunbeds when you arrive, so there's no mad 6 a.m. dash, and you can ask to change them, and they'll do their best to accommodate you. Well, perhaps with the fact that the hotel or the operator didn't really help in any way, they should have done more on that. We might return to that. We're also coming back to our conversation about property sales. Sarah, you're going to be the next caller on this. We touched on this not by accident, but we just decided to cover a story an hour ago, and it's affected so many people. And some of the sums of money, and the gentleman with whom we spoke lost around 10, many of you losing 5. There's even a story here, Stephen, first-time buyer, fell through in March, accepted in July. Seller's solicitor didn't respond. I'll shorten this down, if I may, Stephen. Around Christmas, I ended up calling the council and the developer to resolve some of the issues. It fell through due to mortgage offers expiring, rates being too high, and the delays were down to their solicitor. I've lost costs of £23,000. Stephen, in some parts of the country, that's nudging the requirement for the deposit. We'll get back to that troublesome world after this. 9:45, LBC News headlines. Dominic Ellis.
Health officials insist the risk to the public from the hantavirus-hit cruise ship is low, as two Britons who were on board self-isolate at home in the UK. President Trump has predicted the war in Iran will be over quickly after holding what he described as very good talks with Tehran. And voters are heading to the polls for elections in England, Scotland and Wales. LBC weather cloudy for most, with showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells in the east, a high of 15 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. There's a fault with the radio systems between the train drivers and the signallers, so various delays and cancellations on lots of train services. So mainly affecting cross-country, southern, southwestern, Gatwick Express and Thameslink, but also on London Overground, there are severe delays on the Mild May line. On the roads, there are severe delays in Barnes because the Upper Richmond Road, which is part of the South Circular Road, is closed both ways after an accident. In Hersham, the Esher Road remains closed eastbound, and that's also after an accident. The M23 is very busy southbound at the M25 junction. There was an accident and traffic was being held. Well, that traffic's now being released, but it's still very slow on the approach.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
The start of the unintentionally funniest moment in the history of British television. And, of course, today is one of those days that Mystery Hour was invented for.
James O'Brien at 10. Listen on our free Global Player app or the LBC app.
With up to £3,000 every year towards career growth at Amazon, I started in the warehouse knowing I could train in things like coding or robotics. It turns my job into a career. So it means I can be who I want to be, even if I haven't quite decided who that is yet.
Amazon, opening doors with up to £3,000 every year towards career growth. Eligibility conditions about type and duration of employment apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060973, LBC.
Picture your car. You want to sell it, but you feel trapped by the chains of your finance deal. Now, listen closely. Hear that? That was the sound of your car selling and the cash hitting your account. It's easy to sell your financed car on Motorway. We'll handle the admin and pay off the finance for you.
It's not magic. It's Motorway.
Sell your car today at motorway.co.uk. Process may vary in case of negative equity.
At John Lewis Money, we know your home is more than an address. It's the sunlight pouring in. Well, sometimes. The coffee on tap and the best spot on the sofa. It's why our home insurance is thoughtfully designed with three levels of flexible cover for the home you've created. Because when you notice the details, you notice the difference. Search John Lewis Money. Terms and exclusions apply. John Lewis Finance Limited is authorised for insurance distribution and credit broking by the Financial Conduct Authority.
Shine Night Walk London is a 10k, half marathon or full marathon supported walk around the city at night on the 19th of September to raise vital money for Cancer Research UK. It's also...
everyone walking with all their colours, twinkling away.
We can actually see how nice London is. And London is different at night time.
Celebration of life, and it gives hope.
Step towards a brighter future at shinewalk.org today to get 30% off your entry. Together, we are beating cancer. T's and C's apply.
Join Andre Rieu at OVO Arena, Wembley, London on 18th of September. Book now at andrerieu.com.
How does a $20 golf gadget end up being used as a bomb detector in war zones worldwide? I'm Alice Levine and this is Explosive Lies, the podcast exposing a scam that fooled governments and security services across the globe. Open our free Global Player app and search Explosive Lies to start listening today.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Just before we move on from the Harry Potter conversation, it's been pointed out the Harry Potter Studio Tour is the most visited London tourist attraction for the last 4 years in a row, beating places such as Buckingham Palace or the Tower of London. And people will obviously, this is a global appeal, people will come from around the world to go to those studios just outside London, up in Hertfordshire. So that success is incredible. Let's talk property sales. We might try and get into sunbeds as well, but Sarah's in Cambridge, hanging on the line. And what happened to you? How frustrating is your story? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I listen to you regularly, particularly on the school runs, but this is the first time I've called in.
How kind of you.
And, well, it's a cause close to my heart, and I'm still living the impact of the sale of our house in Watford, not so far from Newton, actually, Harry Potter World, falling through in July 2022.
Oh, right.
So essentially, I am an NHS consultant and I was working at a local hospital in Watford.
Right.
My husband is ill health retired. He has secondary progressive MS and he's wheelchair dependent. And we have three children who are now 16, 15 and 9.
Right.
In October 21, I took up a new post at Adam Brooks Hospital in Cambridge with the idea that we would move to Cambridgeshire to be closer to one of my siblings, as Simon's health, you know, is going to get worse and I would need more family support. And I work full-time, essentially. So I had to take the job in October 21, but the children were still in school in Watford, and we obviously needed to sell our house in Watford and buy another, and also get them into schools in Cambridge. So we planned for a year, thinking that we should be able to align, hopefully things would happen. So in the March 22, having, you know, redone up our house, and I'd done lots of DIY myself to make it in its best condition, we put it on the market for £1.2 million. It was an Edwardian semi-detached house. We put a lot of... you know, love and care.
A lot of love into it, yeah, a lot of renovations.
Over 15 years. And we had an open day because it was still quite a buoyant market then. And we had several viewings and several asking price offers and two just above. The agents who were selling for us, that who were a notable franchise, said, we think the couple with the children and the mother, the woman is pregnant, we think they're a good fit. You should accept their offer, which we did. Yep. And then I'm still, by the way, at this point, I'm still having to live in Watford and commute back and forth to Cambridge each day and sometimes stay over.
Roughly how long is that a drive?
It's about an hour and a half drive, but sometimes I would stay over because you never get away on time, do you, working in a hospital?
I should imagine.
I'm looking at houses when I can and online and putting in offers, eventually putting in offers. And then they go, at the end of April, the couple came back with the female's parents to have another look around, some notion about wanting to measure up, which was a bit strange. But I thought, oh, well, you only see it, you know, they probably just want another look, you know, because you don't get a lot of time to, you're making a massive decision. So I thought it was fine. The guy was American. He was like quite smooth talking about how, you know, they had two daughters and she was expecting a boy and we had two boys and a girl. They met my husband in his wheelchair. You know, they knew our personal story. This is because a lot of this goes on without the face-to-face contact, which I think is where people don't take responsibility. They think there's no face to the name. So they don't, their conscience doesn't kick in. But they met us.
And the situation in which your husband was as well, which is important.
All of that stuff. Yeah, yeah. But then, and why we're moving. And then they went very, very quiet. So our solicitor couldn't get hold of their solicitor. The estate agents couldn't get hold of them to find out what they were doing. By the end of June, I was starting to get worried, and we were actually about, at that time, Cambridge market was very buoyant, and you had to be, to have a chance of getting somewhere, you had to be about to exchange or a cash buyer. So we were in the position, but then I started to realise we haven't exchanged yet. This is a bit strange. What's going on? Eventually, the agent for us managed to get hold of the buyer, and he said, "Oh, sorry for the loss of contact. My wife had the baby early." At that point, I thought, "Well, being a doctor," and I thought, "Oh, okay, that's a life event, and they're going to, you know, it can affect you financially and all the rest of it." So I half expected them to pull out for that reason.
What ultimately happened, Sarah?
So ultimately,
these are disparately complex stories.
Yeah. So on the 14th of July, we were notified by their solicitor to our solicitor to say they were formally withdrawing from the purchase of the house. They don't give an explanation. They don't need to legally. However, the following day, the estate agents for another house that was on our road for the same price called me and said, we see you've gone back on the market. We've just sold a house, a very similar house to yours, the same price, in your road, and we'd like to sell yours. We can see yours has fallen through. I told them the story, and then he was dumbstruck. He said, I can't, because I said about the mother having the baby prematurely. He said, I'm not in contract with them anymore. He said, I can tell you categorically, they've been dealing on this house, the other house, since February, March. No. They missed out the first time. They've been trying to negotiate £50,000 off. In the end, they got £10,000. And I said to him, okay, so they exchanged on that 15th of March and they moved the following week, they completed the following week. And you know what? The biggest kicker is that, one, the baby was born prematurely, but at the end of June, and they've been dealing since March. Okay, right. So that was just a lie. And then that was the reason they gave me, luckily. Yes. And then they used the same solicitor to do the conveyancing on both properties in the road. Now, that solicitor knew that they were not property developers.
That has to be a breach of his or her obligations.
Well, you would have thought, wouldn't you? But I spoke to my own solicitor at the time, and he said that solicitor was not to know that they weren't buying two properties for the same price.
Now, lastly, how has it ended up for you your husband and your children. Did you get the move?
We did, but it's been a really, really difficult time. We're £240,000 worth off. Oh. We're in a house that's falling down. I had the I'll have been qualified a doctor 30 years next year. I had my first time off with stress a whole month 2 years ago, because what the impact of that, the actual impact of that was that in that July when they pulled out, we couldn't find another buyer. In September 22, without mentioning any politicians' names, but there was a budget, a mini budget.
Okay, let's go carefully with all of that. So ultimately, what would your advice be to people? What, with the benefit of hindsight being 2020 vision, what perhaps should your solicitor have done earlier?
Well, I think it would have been good if they'd got on the phone and found out why they'd gone quiet. But yeah, if there was a way of actually getting people to commit much earlier on in the process, because this has had such an enormous impact on us financially, emotionally. I mean, we've had to rent for 2 years. Yes. I had to be separated for husband. You can't rent houses with disabled accommodation. That's the problem.
Oh, I see. Of course, your husband, reminding my listeners, is in a wheelchair. Sarah, I have to go there to get other people involved. I mean, that is a vast amount of money to lose. That's hundreds of thousands of pounds that you're out of pocket, and such an illustrative story. Best wishes to you, Sarah. I hope it resolves itself. I don't say that lightly. Let's finish with perhaps certainly a lighter story, certainly from poor Sarah as well. Alan in Slough. We're talking sunbeds. Alan, your story about that. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, I've got rather an amusing story concerning a German chap and a sunbed.
Right.
Me and my wife were on holiday in Mallorca a couple of years ago, and we come down in the morning, and my wife's got a good self has got a sunbed, has managed to find one.
Right.
And next to her was a sunbed with a towel on it. So I hung around for about 5 minutes. I thought, well, the guys, whoever's out, they're not coming, they haven't come back.
Right.
So I took the towel up and I put it on the rail behind me. About 10 minutes later, this German guy's turned up, a youngish guy, probably in his 30s, demanding that I give up his sunbed, saying it's his.
Right.
And I said, well, I'm not moving. He said, well, it's my sunbed. So we had a bit of an altercation. I didn't lose my temper with him. I said, well, I'm not moving. You know, he said, well, I'm going to get the manager.
Good.
Excellent. And I said, well, you can get the Pope if you like, but I'm not moving. So he went and got the manager, and this poor girl came over. And
there was no other sunbed for him to go to nearby that could have resolved it or anything like that?
Sadly not, no. He was.
So how did it end up? Who won, as it were?
Well, the manager, she didn't want to get involved, to be honest, so she sort of scuttled off.
Right.
So I just lay there, you know, sort of, you know, in victory, as it were, for a little while. So I was there for about 5 minutes, but I realised he was sort of hanging around. I realised that the lady on the left was his wife.
Oh.
But she'd been very quiet. So I turned around to her and said, is that your wife?
Yeah.
And he said, yes, that's my wife, you know. I said, and I felt sorry for him then. I said, nah, go on then, you can have it back.
There we are. Peace broke out. And he took
the... Yeah.
Good man, you did well. And I've got to end there because we're done for another day. Thank you. Apologies to Carl. Raymond, Julie, we can't get to you. Now, of course, tomorrow is a special show. We're starting early with the results of that thing we can't talk about. We'll be here from 6. I'm done for today. James O'Brien's the other side of the news on LBC. I'm with you tomorrow morning from 6. Meantime, stay safe.
Thank you, Nick. As you mentioned, a strange day. I still, after all these years, don't fully understand why we are prevented from talking about that thing, but we won't. Instead, I will introduce you later today. I can't remember the last time I was this excited about a guest, to the man who brought us one of the finest moments in television history, arguably the best ever unintentional TV episode, something to which I frequently return when I'm in need of a bit of a giggle. I think you've worked out who it is. If you haven't, I'll probably forget to tease it, but I'll try to remember. Mystery Hour at 12, of course, because, of course, we just have to fill the show with things that are not that thing we can't talk about. So wait and see what we're starting with.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the UK Health Security Agency has insisted to LBC that the risk to the public from hantavirus remains very low. Two British people on board the cruise ship at the centre of an outbreak have returned to the UK and are now self-isolating at home. Three people have died on board the ship, which set sail last month. Chief Scientific Officer Professor Robin May has given this update to LBC.
In terms of the individuals concerned, there are also, you know, very small numbers of people that we will be focusing on. So we're working very closely with them. Each individual is different. And so clearly, you know, people who are already at home, there's different arrangements. The people that are currently on the ship still, we're making arrangements for, and it's being decided on an individual basis what the best way for them to self-isolate is. But we'll continue to work very closely with them until we believe any possible risk has passed.
Officials are looking into reports the outbreak started when a Dutch couple visited a landfill site during a birdwatching trip in Argentina. Speaking to LBC this morning, consultant virologist Dr. Chris Smith explained more.
They're entertaining the hypothesis that at least one or two of the people on the ship had been to an area where there were lots of birds and birds flock to waste dumps. So they went to this tip to see a particular bird species, and they may have encountered an environment where there were lots of rodents. Rodents are obviously drawn to rubbish because they pick through it. Bites allegedly can transmit this virus, but much more common is going to be breathing in particles which have been shed by the animals.
President Trump says it's very possible that a deal to end the war with Iran can be reached. Tehran has said that it is reviewing a new proposal from America, but their top official says Washington wants Tehran to surrender. A serving Metropolitan Police officer and four former Met officers are being investigated for potential misconduct. The police watchdog is looking into how the force handled sexual abuse claims made against Mohammed Al-Fayed. The former Harrods owner died in 2023, having never faced any charges. More than 400 allegations have been made against Al-Fayed, dating back to 1977. Shell says its earnings have jumped by nearly 25% in a year, thanks in part to the disruption caused by the war in Iran. The oil company says it's made more than £5 billion in the first 3 months of 2026. And voters are heading to the polls for elections in England, Scotland and Wales. Polling stations close at 10 o'clock tonight. In the city a short time ago, the FTSE 100 was trading down 48 points at 10,390. The pound buys $1.36 and €1.15. LBC weather, showers for northern and western parts of the UK. Some sunny spells for eastern and southern areas, cloudy elsewhere. A high of 15 degrees. From Global's newsroom to LBC, I'm Dominic Ellis.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission, and it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible, and make a claim with HMRC for free, online. Just search, don't get caught out.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
It is 3 minutes after 10 and you are listening to James O'Brien on LBC. It's extraordinary, isn't it? Genuinely extraordinary. Just how much excitement the studio guest that I'll have later today engenders. Just glancing at my inbox, most of you have worked out who it is. If you're of a certain age, it's probably the elephant doing a poo on Blue Peter, isn't it? That you used to think of first when you had a sort of television studio-based moment that went entirely awry. This is not in the script. This was not planned. Was it John Noakes desperately trying to sort of clear it? And then along came Guy Gomer, the gentleman who thought that, well, who was at the BBC for a job interview, I think in the IT department, and who then found himself preparing, well, he found himself live on television being interviewed about something he wasn't previously aware of, and yet he rose to the challenge in the most extraordinary fashion. Only afterwards, watching it back, because very few people would have watched it on the time, I think it was on the 24-hour news channel, you could see this extraordinary opera play out on his face. He's blessed with one of those incredibly expressive physogs, and this sort of operatic drama played out on his features, oscillating from almost impish mischief through to abject terror. And the entire world was entranced. And then he disappeared. Well, he's reappeared. Not only has he reappeared, he's collaborated on a new book. And we will be meeting him at about half past, all being well, at about half past 11 today. I have interviewed prime ministers. Have I ever interviewed a president? I don't think I've ever interviewed a president. I've interviewed a vice president. I have interviewed pop stars, film stars, stars of stage and screen, sports stars. I've done them all. I've counted them in and I've counted them out. Just go and have a look at the back catalogue of Full Disclosure episodes. Never mind the people who've appeared on this programme. But I'm not sure anybody has popped up in my thoughts over the years as often as Guy Gomer. I suspect that if you were to look at my YouTube history, you would find that I refer back over the years since it happened. I've gone back to that clip to show it to people who were unaware of it, which is always extraordinary to me, and then just to refresh my own memory of that moment of magic, that moment of beauty. And he will be with us in about an hour and a half's time. And speaking of things that... So, do you remember that thing? I know I say this a lot, but you're used to it by now, and frankly, you know, it's kind of charming. Well, that thing a few years ago, when there was a big hoo-ha about men thinking about the Roman Empire. I still never really got my head around that. It was, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? I talked to Eleanor about this some mornings, and she looks at me with that long-suffering... expression. So you're not talking about this again. Because when I don't get something, you know, I worry at it. Like a dog with a bone. I don't understand something. I want you to explain it to me. There's quite a few things as I get older that I just don't understand. And I want you to explain them to me. Earlier this week we were talking about something political, so I can't even tell you what it was. But I don't understand this. Why was the big thing about people talking about the Roman Empire? How often do you think about the Roman Empire? I thought, is this a sort of thing that I'm not in on? Is this a joke, the punchline to which has not been shared with me? What? But there are some things that get into your brain and occupy a very strange space. They take up more space than they should. And you find your mind returning to this territory again and again and again, even when there's much more important or much more exciting things going on in the world. And oddly, I'm pretty sure these stories were around before I had my moment in Marks and Spencer's the other day, which I've spoken to you now about on at least two different occasions. I think we've done two phone-ins on this subject since I had my moment in Marks and Spencer's. And I'm pretty sure these stories were around before. Well, I know that they were, because one of the ones that we focused on was already in the news when I found myself having my moment in Marks and Spencer's. But every time they come around again, this is the thing that is occupying the strangest space in my mind. What would you do as a member of the public, never mind a member of staff, if a member of supermarket staff was trying to contain a potentially violent shoplifter? What would you do? And you don't know until it happens. I think I know what I would do. I would sort of hold back until somebody else did something. I'm not comfortable touching a woman shoplifter in any way, shape or form. Not because I'm worried about being sued or anything like that, or accused of inappropriate behaviour. I just don't... I wasn't raised that way. I would find it very, very hard to use physical...